Okay, good morning. We're going to call this meeting of the TRPA Governing Board to order. The date is Wednesday, May 26, 2021. It is 10:16 a.m. and we are having a virtual meeting today. First item on the agenda is a roll call to determine the quorum. Mari, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding.
Here.
Mr. Beyer.
Present.
Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
I'm here.
Ms. Faustinos? Mr. Friedrich?
Here.
Ms. Gustafson?
Here.
Mr. Hicks?
Present.
Ms. Hill?
Here.
Mr. Lawrence?
Here.
Ms. Novacell?
Here.
Mr. Rice? Ms. Williamson?
Here.
Mr. Yates?
Here.
Ms. Faustino? And Mr. Rice? Okay. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Great, thank you. I appreciate it. And just, I did want to apologize to everybody for us jumping on a little bit late. We're on with legal committee, and legal committee had a matter that extended a little bit longer than we thought that it would. So our apologies. Now I'd like to jump into the meeting rules for the day. To observe and participate in the meeting, go to www.trpa.gov. Select May 26, 2021, Governing Board meeting on the calendar and allow the link to the webinar. Follow the link to the webinar. Members of the public can find all meeting materials there as well. To participate in this Governing Board meeting with your comments, please utilize the hand-raising function in the GoToWebinar platform with the appropriate agenda item. If you wish to make a comment about something not on the agenda, we will hear your comments during the general public comment period at the end of the meeting, agenda item 13. With your hand raised, you will be unmuted by TRPA staff and you'll have 3 minutes to address the governing board. If you have contacted the TRPA for reasonable accommodation and received a unique PIN for dial-in, please make sure you enter that PIN so that you may be identified and unmuted by TRPA staff. If you are using GoToWebinar's Instant Join web app, please make sure it is opened in the Google Chrome browser and that you allow access to your microphone in order to be unmuted. If you're joining via the call-in number posted on our website, please note that this is a listen-only option. If you wish to address the governing board, you'll need to log in via GoToWebinar on your computer, tablet, or smartphone, or dial your unique PIN number. To governing board members, if you wish to speak, please alert me via the chat function if you're online, or speak up if you're calling in. Please set your chat box now to message panelists and organizers to ensure that I see your message. Board members may only use that chat function to indicate the desire to speak. This function must not be used to have sidebar conversations. And finally, everyone remember to mute your mic unless speaking to cut down on background noise. Okay, we're to the point of the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would ask if John Marshall would please lead us in that. Let's all unmute, please. And when John starts, it won't sound perfectly harmonious, I know that, but we can all say it and get through this item. John?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We're moving to agenda item number 3, approval of the agenda. Are there any changes, Joanne, to the agenda?
There are no changes, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll deem the agenda approved as posted. Approval of minutes. We are now on agenda item 4, We have a set of minutes from the April 28, 2021 Governing Board meeting. Are there any questions, comments, or changes?
Mr. Chair,
I think John has all edits to recommend.
Okay, great. Do I have a motion to approve?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I didn't have one small edit.
Yeah.
This is John.
Hi.
By the way, just great minutes, so thorough. So I'm very impressive. So just one small one, page 31 under board comments and questions. Second paragraph there under that section, third sentence should say Rocky Point is a low and moderate income walkable workforce neighborhood, not low end.
Thank you. With that change, do I have a motion? And the other changes that were proposed by Shelley.
Motion to approve the minutes as amended.
Okay, John, are we doing, we're just doing a verbal, right? Or are we taking roll?
You can do a verbal as long as you ask for nay votes.
Yep, I will. All in favor of approving the minutes with those changes?
Aye.
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 Any against? Hearing none, the motion passes. We will move to agenda item number 5, TRPA consent calendar. There are 4 items on consent. 2 items were reviewed by Operations and Governance Committee, and 1 was reviewed by the Legal Committee, and 1 was not reviewed by any committee. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in a GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Shelley, can you give us the report from the Operations and Governance Committee meeting earlier this morning?
Certainly. The voting members of the Ops Committee unanimously recommended approval of both items 1 and 2.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there any discussion from the board members on that matter? If so, just chime in. I'm not looking right now at the chat. Hearing none, let me move to the next item here. Just give me 1 second. Consent calendar item number 4 is APC membership appointments for Washoe County lay member and the Tahoe Basin Fire Chiefs alternates Todd Stroop, primary, and Scott Lindgren, secondary. The Washoe County Board of Commissioners appointed Judith Simon as the APC lay member at their May 25 meeting. An updated staff report has been posted and provided to all board members. Are there any discussions relating to consent calendar item number 4 from the board members? If so, just chime in, please. Okay. I did want to give an update on our legal committee. John, actually, could you give us that update while I'm dealing with this?
Yes, the legal committee recommended the settlement agreement and the resolution of violation for Action Water Sports and Hyatt with a unanimous vote.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And was there any discussion from any board members on that item? Okay, hearing none. We'll now go to public comment on this. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, the consent calendar, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. And I'll turn this over now to Maria or to Catherine. I'm not sure who I'm turning it over for purposes of public comment.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. This is Catherine Hanglin with TRPA. I will assist you with public comment today.
And thank you.
We have no hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Great. Thank you. Public comment is now deemed closed. Okay. It's time for a motion. Does anyone have a motion for the consent calendar?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of the consent calendar.
Great. Thank you. Mari, will you please call roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice? Ms. Novacell?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Excellent. Thank you. Before we move on to agenda item 6, we need to adjourn as the TRPA and convene as the TMPO. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adjourn as TRPA and convene as the TMPO.
Okay. John, can I get a verbal or do we need to roll call this?
You can get a verbal.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any noes? Hearing none, we are now convened as TMPO. And Heather, you're on the line, correct?
I am, thank you.
Okay, great. It's great to have you. Okay, agenda item 6 is the TMPO calendar. There are two items on consent, both of which are reviewed by the Operations and Governance Committee. As a reminder to the public, after board discussion on the site, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. Shelley, can you give us a report from the Operations and Governance Committee meeting earlier this morning? Again, sorry, I hate to ask again.
That's okay. That's all right. My answer is going to be very similar to my first.
Excellent.
Voting members of the committee, Ops Committee, unanimously recommended approval of both items 1 and 2.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Is there any discussion from the board members? Hearing none, we will go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. And I will now turn it over to Catherine to manage the public comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If any member of the public would like to make a comment on this item, please raise your hand by clicking the hand icon on the left-hand side of your control panel. And Mr. Chair, we have no hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. And then we will deem public comment to be closed. At this point, I would request a motion to approve the TMPO consent calendar.
So moved.
Great, thank you. We have a motion, and Mari, will you please call roll with Heather?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes, apologize.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes, I've been muted. I finally got unmuted.
Ms. Novacell?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Noel?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Great, thank you. Before we move on to agenda item 7, we need to adjourn as a TMPO.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to adjourn as TMPO and reconvene as TRPA.
Okay, I have a motion. All in favor, please say yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Any opposed? Any opposed, please say no. Hearing none, the motion passes. Okay, we are now on agenda item 7, planning matters, 7A. Let's see, briefing on basin-wide forestry initiatives and forest health activities. Information on this item can be found on page 145. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. At this point in time, I'd like to pass this over to Dr. Kat McIntyre to present this item. Kat?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and Governing Board. As mentioned, my name is Kat McIntyre. I'm the Forest Health Program Manager here with the TRPA. Myself, the Forest Service, Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team, and Jeff Cowan with the TRPA are going to be presenting several updates on forest health and restoration activities that are occurring in the basin currently. Next slide, please. So this is the agenda for the presentation. I will give a brief history of forest restoration just to update everyone and get us all on the same page. Jeff Cowan will discuss fire pit updates and coordination with agencies on social media messaging. We will then hear from Milan Yates with an update from the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. The Forest Service, so Heather Noel and Vic Lyon are on the call, and they will update on what the Forest Service priority projects are looking like for the coming season. Lastly, I'll wrap up with any additional forestry updates, and then we'll open it up for questions. Next slide, please. So the Washoe tribe and their ancestors have been calling Lake Tahoe their home for at least 2,000 years. As many of you know, the Comstock era, we saw a huge boom in mining. And with that, there was clear cutting and logging in the basin for beams to go into those mines. That was followed by a history of fire suppression, almost a decade of fire suppression. And so what you see now in the basin, about 90% of the forest that you see is actually less than 100 years old. And what we have is a more homogenous, even age stand class than ever before. 2007, the Angora fire struck in the basin, and this led to some significant changes. We saw the Blue Ribbon Fire Commission formed, which led to the Lake Tahoe Basin Multi-Jurisdictional Fuel Reduction and Wildfire Prevention Strategy. And from that came the creation of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. The number that you see on the right is 87,552 acres of forests have been treated to reduce hazardous fuels in the basin. So pre-Angora, we were at about 20,000 acres. And then after Angora and with the creation of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team and the multi-jurisdictional fuel reduction, we have really ramped up treatment and almost quadrupled the number of acres that we have been able to treat. Next slide, please. So a little bit of background on the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. As mentioned, it was formed in 2008, and it comprises 21 different Lake Tahoe Basin agencies, ranging from fire agencies to federal, state, and local land managers, the Washoe Tribe, regulators, and cooperative extensions. There are two key focus areas for the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team. One is project prioritization, support, and coordination. So this is where we develop the annual incident action plan, which outlines all of the projects that we intend to take up for the next season. And then the second focus area is the public outreach and assistance piece, which you will hear from on the next slide from Jeff Cowan. Next slide, please. So Jeff, if you would like to start your presentation.
All right, well, thank you very much, Kat, and greetings, Governing Board. As many of you know, the formation of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team also prompted TRPA and our partners to organize a public information team. That's how we get the name Fire Pit. And the team was formed to amplify messages about the need for defensible space and about fuel reduction projects, fire safety, and wildfire preparedness. So the team includes public information officers from TFFT organizations, but we also include nonprofits, neighborhood organizers, and the University of Nevada Cooperative Extension is an important piece of this. Well, we work together to inform the public about the work of fire partners throughout the region and to really coordinate the public information and to gain consistency of messages and their timing. We do promote defensible space and neighborhood cooperation to become fire-adapted communities. And, you know, one of the reasons we do this is because public education can inspire people to take action. So I want to tell you that in combination with enforcement programs, since 2017, 21,000 defensible space inspections have been conducted by regional fire districts, departments, and CAL FIRE. That's nearly half the basin. And they set a record in 2020, reporting 6,400. Setting a record in 2020 of 6,480 parcels inspected in 1 year. Now, last year, the fire pit, we had to shift focus from in-person special events and neighborhood meetings to online webinars, film screenings, and we disseminated how-to videos across websites and social media channels. We had more than 590 people attend the webinars, and 1,100 people attended an online film screening of Wilder Than Wild. So last year had some successes, as you can see, but TRPA Forester Bruce Barr actually shattered his own record for tree removal permits. He issued 1,100 permits and over 4,000 trees, and Bruce has worked hard to get his turnaround time on tree removal permits down just a couple of days. So with the successes, along with the rest of the region and our nation, we watched in shock as the worst wildfire year on record swept across California and the West. And we're also remaining on alert this year as drought and wildfire conditions appear to be continuing. So this year, the fire pit is expanding its usual wildfire awareness month to a summer-long campaign with themed messages, materials, press releases, and social media packages that are changing monthly. The meta topic of the campaign that kicks off this, the meta topic of the campaign kicks off this month is home hardening, and that's going to lead with ads like the one that you saw on the last slide, with sub themes ranging from evacuation preparedness to prescribed fire. So one more slide, please, Tracy. We've also had support from Take Care Tahoe, which has helped shape some additional media and signage that allows our work to simultaneously stay under the Tahoe umbrella campaign as well. The team is tentatively planning a return to in-person events this summer and has a number of great topics to help engage and educate property owners and renters in English and in Spanish, and to approach neighborhood organizers, again, working on the fire-adapted communities adoptions. The last piece I'm going to mention is that part of this summer-long campaign is increasing awareness through boards and commissions and public bodies. An example of this is the resolution that you as a board will be considering right after Kat's presentation. I want to say that these public proclamations highlight the need for everyone to work together, but they also show leadership in the work to make our community safer. So that is all from me for now, unless there's any questions, and then I'm going to turn it back over to Kat.
And next slide, please. So now we're going to hear from Milan Yates. Sorry, Milan, you had your camera up. You were right on time regarding updates from the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team. Take it away, Milan.
Okay, thank you, Kat. Can everybody hear me okay? Great, I can't see anything. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board for having me today. Thank you, Kat and Jeff, for setting the stage there. I would like to follow up a little bit on what Kat said there in the beginning and then what Jeff said. So I'm here to speak today. My name is Milan Yates. I am the Acting Community Forestry Program Supervisor here at the California Tahoe Conservancy, and I'm here to speak today on behalf of the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team. I'd like to speak a little bit about the other arm of the team, the project prioritization and support arm that Kat mentioned. Jeff did a great job kind of explaining the undertakings of the public outreach and assistance team. And so I would like to talk a little bit about how the team prioritizes and plans our fuels treatments. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this is a slide that's getting a lot of mileage. I've actually presented on this one a couple of times before. This slide was developed, or this map was developed, as a companion piece to the basin's SNPLMA Round 18 nomination package. So SNPLMA, the Southern Nevada Public Land Management Act, is a program administered by the BLM. They sell off public land in the Nevada area, in the Las Vegas area, and then the proceeds are then put back into the pot, into a federal program for ecological restoration projects. One of the categories is hazardous fuels, and the Tahoe Basin has benefited from this category for a number of years, probably about a decade or a little bit longer than a decade, maybe since early 2000. The Tahoe Basin has been receiving SNPLMA funding for hazardous fuels projects in the basin. A lot of this map shows, so when we look at this slide here, if you look at the gray areas, those are projects that have been completed in the last 5 years. A lot of those were funded with SNPLMA money. And this map was actually shown up as, like I said, drawn up as a companion piece to the nominations that were turned in by individual entities. Each color represented on the map there is essentially a different entity and a different nomination that was submitted for this round. And the reason we like this map so much is you can really, it paints the picture of how we plan our work and prioritize and try to get funding for our work. You can see there that there's still some gaps and we're trying to fill those in, but the idea is that these treatments are going to connect to each other. We call this the nomination interconnectivity map. And it was really designed to show how these projects, you know, past and future projects connect to each other to provide better wildland urban interface fuel hazard reduction and safer neighborhoods. Really quickly here before we move to the next slide, a couple things I want to point out on this one. What you'll see there in the blue area was the Tahoe Network of Fire Adapted Communities nomination administered by the Tahoe Resource Conservation District. That is the main key piece for the defensible space inspections that everyone that Jeff had referenced earlier, both through all of the fire districts. The light green is U.S. Forest Service power line resilience corridors. The darker green is U.S. Forest Service planned fuels projects. The orange is California Tahoe Conservancy projects. And then the lighter orange is community forestry, what we're calling. The community forestry is a big thing. We're looking to implement that with the U.S. Forest Service. I'll talk about that at the end of my presentation. Before we move to the next slide here, I want to direct everybody's attention and just bear with me here. I know there's a lot going on the screen. But if you look at Fallen Leaf Lake there, and I would say approximately at the 3 o'clock position, kind of on the east side of Fallen Leaf Lake, you'll see between the greens and the gray there a kind of open area of white that's not accounted for on this map. We can move to the next slide, please. Okay, so if we go now to that same 3 o'clock position there on the Fallen Leaf Lake, you'll see a shaded green area. That is a project scheduled for the 2021 season on U.S. Forest Service property. This slide is now it's a screenshot of a draft. The team is producing the incident action plan. We're currently working on the production of this plan. It should be finalized and ready to distribute in about 2 weeks. We're currently going through the draft and the partner review. But this is essentially the way that we show the work that we're going to do for the season. So you'll notice that there's less activity, if you will, on this map, but these are actual projects that will be happening this summer season. The green is depicting Forest Service. Some of the orange there is Conservancy. And what you see in the red crosshatch is the defensible space target inspection areas. So again, this map depicts the South Shore, similar to the previous map, but you know, as you go around the lake, each division or each area of the lake has a map similar to this that we'll show and put together in the plan. Next slide, please. Excuse me. Yeah, that's the end of my slide. That's fine. We can stay here and I'll just finish up. I apologize. So we can actually go back to my first slide, if you don't mind, Tracy. Perfect. Okay. So it takes a lot of work and a lot of planning to get a map produced like this and to get projects drawn in like this. And I just want to say that this, you know, this kind of thing wouldn't be possible if the team wasn't so cohesive and all of these 21 agencies didn't work together so well. We really have a leg up here in the basin. One final note here I'll leave before I close is that the basin nominations for this round 18 totaled $42 million. And they made it through the first and second group of scoring and recommendations. The basin nominations were recommended collectively for $35 million in funding. A number of the nominations were recommended for 50% funding. Just last week, the SNPLMA Executive Committee met. Representatives from the Tahoe Basin spoke, and the Executive Committee actually committed to re-looking at the 50% recommendations and seeing if there was more funding available to bring those whole to 100%. So that's really good news, and the partners are excited. We're just going to cross our fingers and wait. And I guess kind of the final last piece I'll talk about here is something that's really exciting that the Conservancy and the LTBMU are joining together on. We entered into a good neighbor authority agreement with the LTBMU. The Conservancy and the LTBMU entered into this agreement with the idea being that we're going to be able to complete some community forestry treatments. And when I say that, I'm speaking about the areas here on the map that are really, it's in the blue and the light orange underlaid underneath the blue. Essentially what this is it's going to allow the Conservancy and the Forest Service to be able to do comprehensive vacant urban lot treatments on public ownership inside the subdivisions. You know, the current way of doing things is the Conservancy has been managing its urban lots and the Forest Service has been managing its urban lots. Sometimes we're on the same schedule, sometimes we're not. We are really making a concerted effort to try to get together, and we think that this will work and we'll be able to do comprehensive treatments that focus on both the Conservancy state urban vacant lots inside subdivisions and federally owned urban vacant lots. Thank you very much for having me again. This is the end of my presentation. I will be around at the end to answer questions if any arise. Back to you, Kat.
Thank you, Milan. That was great. So Tracy, if you can go to the Forest Service slide, next slide, next slide. Next up, we are going to have Vic Lyon and Heather Noel from the Forest Service give an update on priority projects, work that's being accomplished, and some leadership stuff.
All right. Thank you, Kat, and thank you. That was well done, Milan. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Heather Noel with the U.S. Forest Service. I apologize I'm not on webcam. I apparently selected the wrong button when I joined. I'm here on behalf today of Bill Jackson, our Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit Forest Supervisor, who is currently tending to another commitment. And I'd like to start with a quick update on leadership before my colleague, Victor Lyon, speaks to forest health. It is with pride, albeit obvious misfortune, to share that Bill will be leaving us soon. He joined our unit not too long ago. However, due to family concerns with his daughter recovering from yet another knee surgery, she's a skier, he has decided to return and be with his family in Colorado. I say pride because we all can empathize as leaders with the toll it takes on one of our own to gain a position they relish and then become confronted with a critical family need. Many of us here, and in fact, including myself, have been through that as well. And this decision shows the values in the leader and incredible human we gained in Bill. I've seen him get out on the forest, truly dig into our interests here on the LTBMU and our challenges. And he's already led out in critical unit issues with our regional leadership team in the short time he's been here. I share that because sometimes we don't share a lot of what goes on with internally with the Forest Service, but I wanted to show you he's truly spoken for the Forest Service in this short time, and it's going to be quite a loss. Our agency is actively working on an interim replacement who will be named soon, and I will share that at the next meeting. We wish Bill well and his daughter a full recovery. Now I'll leave the rest of my time to Victor Lyon to speak on forest health, unless there's any questions, Mr. Chair.
No questions. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Welcome, Victor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And hello and good morning. Thank you, Kat, for organizing this. Good morning to everyone on the governing board and who may be listening. My name is Victor Lyon. I'm the Vegetation Management Staff Officer for the Forest Service here on the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit. I'd like to share a couple of key forest health initiatives that the Forest Service is taking on. So on your screen, and thank you, Kat, or whomever is managing the slides, you can see some of our projects. They're listed. So I believe the board is familiar with the Lake Tahoe West Restoration Project, which is a very large project on the west shore of Lake Tahoe, approximately 19,920 acres proposed to be treated currently as we're working through that planning decision. We're anticipating having a decision made in 2022 and to begin preparing restoration activities in 22 and to release contracts in 23. So to start implementation in 23. Then also you can see that there are two utility corridors projects. So generally speaking, Liberty Utilities owns all of the power infrastructure on the California side of the lake, and NV Energy owns the same type of infrastructure on the Nevada side of the lake. So we're working with both of those utility companies to reduce reduce fuels along the power line corridors, and improve forest health so that the forest is healthier and we have fewer things like snags in proximity to the power lines now and in the future. And so we're being very proactive there. One planning decision has been made. We made a decision with Liberty Utilities. It's called the Liberty Utilities Resilience Corridors Project. And we are implementing one of those projects this year. That's the Montreal thinning contract that's over along Pioneer Trail. You may have seen blue paint on the trees along that corridor. And also with the NV Energy project, we are currently working to make a decision using the Liberty decision as a template. And we're expecting to make a decision in 2022. However, implementation is not going to wait until 2022. Currently, we're using our existing authority, which is a master special use permit, to do fuels reduction work along the NV Energy Resilience Corridor power corridor. So more specifically, some of that work is occurring along what they call the 4100 line, which runs from Incline Village down to Glenbrook. Then also, there's the South Shore Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project, and that utilizes a CE category, same CE category as the NV Energy and Liberty projects, to treat up to 10,000 acres, including up to 3,000 acres of mechanical treatments. The South Shore decision is focused in the South Lake Tahoe area from over by Heavenly on west towards Fallen Leaf Lake and then down south towards Myers. That decision was for 3,737 acres of treatments. And we are also implementing that project now. Then continuing on through our list of projects that are shared here on this slide, the Urban Forestry Project. So the Forest Service has an Urban Forestry EA from many years ago. We're refreshing that planning to make sure that it's current and applicable. And thank you, Milan, for the coordination with the CTC. I really enjoy the coordination we have between the two agencies to better manage our urban lots and address forest health and reduce fuels in proximity to our wildland-urban interface defense zone. So right there in the community. And lastly, I wanted to address prescribed burning. This was a good year. This was a good year. The past 9 months or so, we've been good for prescribed burning. The forest tries to accomplish about 1,000 acres of burning every year. And of course, that varies depending on the wildland fire season. Sometimes we divert resources to address the wildland fires, and then we do not have resources to do as much prescribed burning at home as we'd like to. Or sometimes the risk is too high to do the prescribed burning, but this year was pretty good. Instead of just doing 1,000 acres, we did approximately 1,124 acres. And there's a burn pile backlog in the basin. And this took a pretty good chunk of that, perhaps more than 20% of that burn pile backlog. So great that we had that opportunity. Hope that we can continue on that path. Next slide, please. Okay, two brief topics I'd like to hit on here. The categorical exclusion that I mentioned for the South Tahoe, Liberty, and NV Energy projects was granted in the Water Infrastructure Improvement for the Nation Act of 2016. It's a special authority that's only here in the Lake Tahoe Basin, and it allows for up to 10,000 acres of treatment again, and up to 3,000 of those mechanically. The South Tahoe project is 3,737 acres. The Liberty project is approximately 6,700 acres. And the NV Energy project, while the decision has not been finalized, is approximately 5,330 in its current proposed state. What this category, this categorical exclusion has done is facilitated more rapid planning Instead of doing an EA that might take more than a year, we can do a CE, and those often take just months instead, and we can get to implementation sooner. What we do is we make a single decision, and then we offer multiple contracts off of that planning decision. A great example of that is again, the Montreal thinning that's happening along Pioneer Trail and those blue marked trees that I mentioned earlier. Then last thing I'd like to mention this morning is our collaboration with key partners, like mentioned previously with the California Utah Conservancy. In order for the Forest Service to increase the pace and scale of restoration, and this forest has gone from an average of about 4 million board feet removed from the forest every year to about 11 million board feet. We have to reach out to a lot of partners through a lot of partnership opportunities. And so you can see some of the partners listed there in the National Forest Foundation, Great Basin Institute, the utility companies that I've mentioned. And then there's a whole host of partner agencies. And I'll mention some of the authorities that we use and some of the partners associated with our current use of those authorities. So we utilize the Good Neighbor Authority. That allows us to partner with state, county, and tribal governments to work on federal lands and adjacent lands. A couple examples of those are the Nevada Division of Forestry, where we have a project up by Incline Village, and also the CTC. Milan mentioned the community forestry project there. A different authority, the Stewardship Authority, allows for non-federal partners, so a broader group than the Good Neighbor Authority. That broader group of potential partners, but it comes with a 20% match requirement. Sometimes that's easily accomplished and sometimes not. Our Stewardship Authority partners are typically Great Basin Institute, where we're doing projects with them in the South Tahoe area off of the South Tahoe decision, or National Forest Foundation, whom we're working with on the Liberty Corridor projects, or the Washoe Tribe, working to restore Meeks Meadow. Then we also utilize the Wyden Authority to treat non-federal lands. We partner with the California Tahoe Conservancy, and then also the city of South Lake Tahoe, an example there being the treatments that are occurring around the airport. And there are a number of other participating challenge cost share and other types of grants and agreements. And we're working with other partners. We don't have time this morning to go into all of that, but we work with, of course, state parks, local fire departments, TRCD, the counties like Placer, El Dorado, and Douglas, and others. And with that, I'll conclude my comments from this morning. I want to thank the board for the opportunity to speak and Kat for helping organize this opportunity. And with that, Kat, I'll turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Victor. And thank you, Heather, both for giving updates on the Forest Service work. Next slide, please, Tracy. So lastly, I will wrap this up with a few additional forestry updates that didn't fall into one of those two categories. Next slide, please. So I received updates from the Nevada Tahoe Resource Team on priority work they're going to be accomplishing this season on the Nevada side of the basin. So the Bond Plan Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project, it is located in Lake Tahoe, Nevada State Park. This is an important fuel break that should be being implemented this summer with the proposed ending in 2021. The project was appropriated $250,000 from the U.S. Forest Service LTRA funding through a participating agreement. So another great example of Forest Service partnering with other local agencies. The next project I'd like to highlight is the Marlet Summit Hazardous Fuels Reduction Project. This is a 100-acre fuels reduction project, again, within the Lake Tahoe Nevada State Park. This planned treatment area will help modify fire behavior for wildland fire progressing from the south and west to the east upslope towards the Marlet Basin. Lastly, in terms of urban lots, the Nevada Tahoe Resource Team reported they have 500 urban lots consisting of approximately 232 acres in the Nevada side of the basin. Greater than 99%, so almost 100% of these parcels have been treated, have had fuels treatment at least once 53% of those parcels have received two treatments, and 40% of the parcels have received 3 to 6 treatments. So currently, all urban lots are in maintenance mode for fuels management and forest resilience, and this is really going to enhance community adaptability going forward. Next slide, please. Some of you may have seen that Governor Newsom proposed a $2 billion investment this week in wildfire and emergency preparedness. If it were authorized, this would be the largest in state history in terms of funding going towards wildfire and emergency preparedness. This would do great things in terms of increasing pace and scale of restoration. They highlighted that approximately 1,400 firefighters have been hired on for CAL FIRE this season, and so we'll be starting. And this funding would go towards fuel breaks, fuel treatments, and new equipment for CAL FIRE in general. Next slide, please. Some of you may know there is a Forest Management Workforce Development Seminar series that has been occurring regionally. This is running locally through the Tahoe or the LTCC, the Community College. It's just to continue the work in developing pathways to identify jobs, skills needed, training and curriculum to develop a forest management workforce in the basin, provide best management practices, best practices approach for developing industry pathways, and brainstorm solutions to improve diversity, equity, and inclusion in the industry. Next slide, please. I wanted to add on to what Victor highlighted about Lake Tahoe West. For those who are new to the board, Lake Tahoe West is a large landscape restoration project, approximately 60,000 acres on the west shore of Lake Tahoe. It is cross-jurisdictional, so it includes conservancy, state parks, Forest Service land, and it is a suite of holistic restoration. So forest thinning, prescribed burning, watershed and stream restoration activities, and biomass utilization. We are currently working through the planning phase of this project. I would like to highlight that does not mean that work is not occurring on the West Shore currently. Lake Tahoe West was really put forward as a way to begin to treat the larger, more general forest, but there are restoration projects that are occurring within the wildland-urban interface and defensible safe zones. Next slide, please. Oh, actually, never mind, sorry, go back. So a little bit more about where we are on the Lake Tahoe West project. The three lead agencies are continuing work on refining the proposed action project description for Lake Tahoe West and will soon be moving into drafting alternatives for the environmental document. The agencies are engaging with a consultant to develop an analysis work plan on how best to coordinate the triple document preparation and analysis amongst the three agencies. I would like to let everyone know the Forest Service will be conducting field surveys this summer to gather additional data to support resource area analysis. And ultimately, as Victor noted, we are hoping to have a finalized document in 2022. Next slide, please. So what's next in terms of the committee, governing board, and Lake Tahoe West? Currently, we are scheduled for summer 2021, so this summer, for the committee, the Forest Health and Wildfire Committee, to have a presentation from the University of Idaho and the Pacific Southwest Research Station on initial findings from the erosion analysis regarding the TRPA code update. So we will have the scientists come in and give the committee just an informational presentation on what their initial findings are and how that might affect a potential code update. And with that, I believe we are at the questions portion. So next slide. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Kat. I really appreciate it. It's a great presentation on such a critical topic. And I know that we're going to have a number of people that have questions regarding this, but I would like to give Bud an opportunity just to comment on the presentation today. And then we can go from there.
Well, thank you, Mark. And I would really like to thank Kat McIntyre for her help on this. She's done an excellent job for our Forest Health and Wildfire Committee on this matter. I'd also like to thank the other participants today, Jeff Cowan and Mylon Yates, and also Heather Knoll and Vic Lyons from the U.S. Forest Service. You know, I know that the last year has been tough on all of these, all of the agencies, TRPA included, but I mean, you know, the all of the agencies that have responsibility over fire safety, fighting the fires, you know, they've been just swamped in the last year, as we know, and you know, may God help us avoid another year like that this year. But you know, one of the things that has suffered from that is that, you know, they've had to divert attention from some of these long-term projects that are very important to forest health in the basin and to fire safety. You know, we had TRPA and the other agencies had represented that we hope to have these environmental reports finished this year. So that they could actually start in 2022, and we're now set back a year. That's through no one's fault. We've all suffered through the COVID period. But, you know, I encourage all of the agencies to finish the environmental final documents to keep this project moving on Lake Tahoe West. It's extremely important. But I think it's been a great update. I appreciate the time and effort that all of you have put into this today. And if I may, at our next meeting, I think it's the meeting that we will hold next month in June, we will have a Forest Health and Wildfire Committee meeting as well. And at that time, as Kat mentioned, we will discuss the update on the proposed ordinance amendment to increase the amount of the slope on which mechanical thinning may be done. We should expect to receive a presentation on that from our consultants, and we'll be back to you, to the full board, on that when that's done. But with all that said, I'd like to thank our participants today. It's your time and work on this is truly appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, it is truly appreciated, and so are you, Bud, and your committee, and all the hard work that I know that staff does to support all of the great policies and ideas that your committee is coming up with. So thank you, Bud. I really appreciate it. I'd now like to open it up to the rest of the governing board. If you have a question or a comment, if you would please just chime in, just verbally is fine. If you want to send me a chat note, that's great too. We are obviously getting close to summer here, so I think all of this information is critical to our understanding of how to get through the summer. Okay, I don't see any questions. Oh yeah, Shelley, yes. Please.
Shelley, anyone of the presenters can address this. And maybe I missed it, and if so, I apologize. But it seems that all of the fuel reduction partners are institutional. Are there any private sector partners involved, especially with respect to the removal of live trees that might be available for milling? Right now, we are suffering from a severe lumber shortage. Prices, those of you in the construction business know that prices of lumber have, in some cases, tripled.
That's a great question. Kat?
Yeah, to my knowledge, I'm going to say no, but Milan, you might have a better understanding of that, or Vic might know that more closely.
Certainly, I can take a stab at that. So currently, members of the team are the land managers and the public agencies that administer the projects. A lot of the implementers are private vendors and contractors. So a lot of this money that we is coming into the basin that we're putting toward fuels work, it not only goes to, you know, internal agency crews, we don't have enough resources to do everything. And so a lot of this money is capacity building and job, putting people to work, essentially. A lot of the projects that I showed on the big map that had all those planned projects will be private vendor projects.
Great. That's great. Thank you.
Yes. No problem. Thank you very much for the question. Victor, did you have something to add?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. You know, there are not significant private lands to contribute to the number of trees that are heading to the mills. However, it's important to note that we have partners like Great Basin Institute or who are working on the landscape. They're private sector, and they offer contracts, as Milan mentioned, to private sector contractors. And I also wanted to address the price of lumber and what's going on at the mills. So right now, there is so much material going to the mills that some of our purchasers are having difficulty with getting a purchase agreement signed with the mill. There's just a lot of black or burned logs going to the mill. So the green trees are often sitting, and contractors are occasionally asking for an extension of their contract because the mills won't take them. So it's not the volume of material that's going to the mill that's driving high lumber prices. It's other market forces. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, one last question. could somebody give me an update on biomass disposal? I know we've had difficulties with getting a consistent supply of materials. I mean, is that still a significant part of this effort to avoid, if possible, burning materials and perhaps compromising our air quality?
I can respond to that. So so biomass remains a large component of the of our activities. So we are we have biomass leaving the basin. A lot of that goes to Loyalton. Some of that used to go to Honey Lake, but now there's a better, closer opportunity there in Loyalton. Some of it also occasionally goes down to Ampine, which is down in Amador County. And we're moving as much as possible. However, biomass remains a challenge on the landscape. We have to subsidize the haul of biomass. It doesn't pay for itself. So it's we're still, there's a lot of folks who are looking for better solutions, you know, closer and more numerous biomass facilities. That's a whole topic to itself. I'll leave it just at that for now. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Vic. That's it, Bruce, Mark.
Thanks, Shelley. Okay, do we have any other questions or comments from board members? If you do, please jump in. If you don't, I'm going to let these wonderful people get back to their all-important work and thank them just profusely for all the hard work that you put in to protect us and to care for our forests. We really appreciate that. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So at this point in time, I'd like to go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on these agenda items, please raise your hand now in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. And I think Catherine will be handling public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. Steve Teixeira, you can unmute on your end to address the governing board.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the Governing Board. For the record, Steve Teixeira, my company is Sustainable Community Advocates. I just wanted to thank the board for its attention to this subject as we start in the May through October time for being wildfire aware in particular, although certainly we need to be wildfire aware throughout the year. I've had an opportunity to work with the Tahoe Basin Fire Chiefs and the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team for a number of years, over a decade now. And it's remarkable the work that they have done with all the partners and the involvement of the private sector, as Milan and Victor indicated. They do a lot of the work on the ground. So thank you very much for paying attention to this item, highlighting it for the public. And of course, I know it's the next item, but I'm sure you will adopt the resolution that is on your agenda next. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else? Catherine?
No, Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Great. Thank you. And I would also like to thank Joanne and the management team for putting this item on the agenda this month as we head into summer. It's so important that this be at top of mind. Thank you very much. Okay. This was informational only. There is no vote. And so we will move to agenda item 7A1, which
Mark, do we have to adopt the resolution?
Yeah.
If that's where we are. Okay. We do. Would you like a motion?
Yeah, please.
I move I move to adopt the resolution in support of the Lake Tahoe Basin Wildfire Awareness Campaign, May through October of 2021.
Okay. Jeff's on. I think Jeff is presenting. Joanne, will you please help me here for just a second?
Yes. Thank you, Shelley, for the motion. And I think Jeff would like to tee this up so that the board sees exactly what we're proposing to adopt. So we'll turn it to Jeff. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I appreciate both of you. Thank you. And thanks, Jeff.
Thanks. Yeah, no worries. Thank you again. And Mr. Chair, members of the board, before you now is the resolution that's been motioned in support of outreach and education campaign that I summarized in the last presentation. I just wanted to say that being involved with public information teams around the region, promoting fire safety and communicating about red flag warning days and some of the prohibitions that have already been announced this year about campfire and charcoal use in some campgrounds, the wildfire awareness campaign this summer is going to be critical, and your support is highly appreciated by the team.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate it. Okay, at this point in time, I think you want me to read this resolution. Is that correct, Joanne?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, revised. Tahoe Regional Plan Agency TRPA Resolution Number 2021, Resolution in Support of Lake Tahoe Basin Wildfire Awareness Campaign, May-through October 2021. Whereas wildfires threaten Lake Tahoe Basin's environmental, economic, and social well-being. And whereas residents of and visitors of the Lake Tahoe Basin's fire-prone communities need to plan and prepare for living in and recreating in high fire hazard areas. And whereas residents and visitors can save precious time and help save lives in an evacuation by preparing a go bag and evacuation plan ahead of time. And whereas residents must prepare their homes and communities to survive wildfire and commit to creating fire-adapted communities. And whereas residents and visitors must be continuously vigilant and prepared for wildlife throughout the year. And whereas TRPA is an active partner on the Tahoe Fire and Fuels team, which includes all local fire protection districts, the states through various agencies, including California Tahoe Conservancy and Nevada Division of Forestry, the USDA Forest Service, and local governments at Lake Tahoe. And whereas partners have worked collaboratively to treat more than 66,000 acres of forest for hazardous fuels reduction since the Angora fire of 2007. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency adopts this resolution to support the Tahoe Fire and Fuels Team Lake Tahoe Wildfire Awareness Campaign from May to October 2021 as an urgent call to action for people to reduce the threat of wildfire, prepare for wildfire, and become fire adapted. Passed and adopted this 23rd of May, 2021 by the Governing Board of the Regional Planning Agency by the following vote. Actually, today, right? 26. All right. So that is the resolution. I've read it into the record. I want to call on the board, on board members to see if they have any questions or comments about the resolution.
Mark, this is Shelley. I apologize for jumping the gun. I was just so excited by this topic. You know, I couldn't contain myself.
Oh, it is so exciting.
So I have
agree.
A question concerning evacuation plans and the status of evacuation plans in the various jurisdictions around the lake. I know that every time we consider a review and adopt a new area plan or revise an area plan, that's always a common source of concern by commenters. So I don't know if Jeff has an update that he could share with us.
Thank you very much. I do not. I know that we continue to work with fire district partners on evacuation, on assisting in their evacuation planning efforts, but I don't have anything immediate.
You know, that might be kind of an interesting topic for a future meeting, a status report on those evacuation plans. It would be interesting to know how many have actually been adopted by local jurisdictions. And I see that Joanne would like to weigh in on that.
Yeah, Shelley, I just wanted to mention that it is actually the law enforcement agencies that work together on those evacuation plans. And so they have those plans actively in place. They work on them, they update them. They work together with the fire districts on this. So yes, we absolutely have evacuation plans in place, but it is law enforcement that takes the lead on developing those plans.
Thank you very much, Joanne.
Okay. Thank you, Joanne.
Really appreciate it. Any other members with questions for Jeff or otherwise? Okay, hearing none, thank you so much, Jeff. I appreciate it. We are now going to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to comment on this item.
Great. Okay, we'll deem public comment closed. And we will ask for a vote. I'm asking for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I actually made a motion a little prematurely, yep. But I think we have a motion on the table.
Very good. Will you please take roll, Maria?
Ms. Saldin?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Great, thank you. Okay, so now agenda item number 7B will be heard after public hearings agenda item number 8A. And we're going to jump to 8A. Is that correct, Joanne?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Item 8A, public hearings.
Yep. All right, so 8A, conformity review for Washoe County's Tahoe Area Plan and corresponding modifications to chapters 34, 36, and 38 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances. Information on this item can be found on page 181. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. And at this point in time, I'd like to hand this over to Michael Conger and Eric Young to present.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. My name is Michael Conger, representing TRPA's long-range planning staff.
Good morning,
I am joined today by Eric Young, who is a senior planner with Washoe County Planning. Eric is here this morning to present Washoe County's proposed Tahoe Area Plan, which was adopted by the Board of County Commissioners in January. Before he begins, though, I wanted to provide a little bit of an introduction. Next slide, please. Area plans as a planning document were first introduced to TRPA as part of the 2012 Regional Plan Update. They were envisioned as a way to harmonize the regional plan with each jurisdiction's master or general plan. Since 2012, TRPA has adopted 5 conforming area plans, and the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan would be the 6th. Area plans are an important component of regional plan implementation. They bring regional plan concepts and strategies down to a local level, and they allow adaptation of regulations to fit the local context. Additionally, adoption of a conforming area plan unlocks several benefits, including development incentives for designated town centers, and the ability for a local jurisdiction to assume additional permitting authority. Washoe County has completed their adoption of the area plan, and they've now submitted the plan to TRPA for conformance review. Both the Regional Plan Implementation Committee and the Advisory Planning Commission have reviewed the plan for conformance and have unanimously recommended its adoption to the Governing Board. Next slide, please. To start out, I'd like to talk a little bit about the scope of the plan. The Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan is proposed to cover all of Washoe County's territory within the Tahoe Basin, and this includes the communities of Incline Village and Crystal Bay, Nevada. The plan uses the same approach as Placer County's Tahoe Basin Area Plan, in that it covers several town centers as well as residential and conservation areas. In terms of development standards and policy changes, the area plan largely consolidates and updates policies from the plan area statements and the community plans that it's replacing. The changes being made are targeted on a few key topical areas, which Eric will discuss in further detail. This effort results in an area plan that aligns with the 2012 regional plan and focuses on new implementing actions that seek to put the updated policies into effect. As I mentioned, a major focus of the effort was updating and modernizing goals and policies. The area plan will also serve as a single planning document that replaces 23 plan area statements and 4 community plans. The boundaries and the requirements for the various plan area statements and community plans are, however, being carried through as new Washoe County regulatory zones. Perhaps the most significant effect of the area plan is that it will unlock incentives for redevelopment of town centers. There are 3 regional plan designated town centers in Washoe County, which would benefit from additional height, density, and coverage. We anticipate that these incentives will catalyze replacement of legacy development with well-designed buildings and pedestrian-friendly site planning that also incorporates water quality improvements. Based on feedback we received from the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, the plan is being developed to align with other applicable local and regional plans, such as the Long Range Transit Plan and the State Road 28 Corridor Plan. Finally, the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan would eliminate a long-standing conflict between TRPA's local planning documents and Washoe County's zoning. If adopted, both the county and TRPA will be operating off of the same planning document rather than having 2 separate and often conflicting sets of land use requirements. Washoe County staff worked closely with TRPA staff in drafting the area plan. In October 2019, the public review draft was presented to the Regional Plan Implementation Committee. Feedback from the RPIC was then incorporated into the public hearing draft, which went through the county's hearing process. The Board of County Commissioners completed their review and adopted the plan, along with corresponding zoning and development code changes, on January 26, 2021. TRPA staff has had the opportunity to review the area plan for conformance with the standards in Chapter 13 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances. We have concluded that the plan, as adopted by the county, conforms to the regional plan and Code of Ordinance standards. A checklist documenting our review is attached to the staff report. TRPA staff has also reviewed the plan to ensure that threshold indicators and compliance measures would not be negatively affected by the plan's adoption. In addition, the county worked with an environmental consultant to prepare an initial environmental checklist. That checklist, which relies on analysis in the regional plan's environmental impact statement, concludes that adoption of the plan will result in no significant effect on the environment. Finally, the Regional Plan Implementation Committee and the Advisory Planning Commission both reviewed their plan at their April and May meetings respectively, and at that time, both RPIC and APC unanimously recommended its approval. Based on this, TRPA staff recommends that the Governing Board adopt the findings, adopt the area plan itself, and adopt related Code of Ordinance amendments to Chapters 34, 36, and 38 to incorporate references to the area plan's design standards. I should also note that we distributed an errata sheet with the revised Attachment K to correct a duplication of one of the ordinances. And with that, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Eric Young, who will discuss the area plan in further detail. Eric?
Thank you so much, Michael. That was more than an introduction. Very important information that's really foundational. I am so pleased to be here today to represent Washoe County in the conformance review of this area plan update, our new area plan. It's been a long road to get here, but it is
indeed been a very productive road. We could not be here today without having worked really hard on establishing a solid foundation with TRPA, on working hard to understand each other, our needs and where we're coming from. And that's not a small feat, and we're very proud of the work we put into establishing that relationship. And I want to thank Michael again for being the TRPA conduit to helping make that relationship possible on the other side. We really couldn't be here today without Michael's input and his help and guidance along the way. So with that, let's get started and talk about some of those details Michael mentioned. Next slide, please. So we did it, as Michael indicated, our first discussion with a TRPA board was in October of 2019 when we first came to the RPIC. That seems like quite a long time ago, I know. Since that time, as you can imagine, a lot has happened, but one of the most important things that has happened is Washoe County did finally approve the document this year in January of 26. As a note, it took that long, as you may be guessing, because in Washoe County, we need two hearings, a first reading and a second reading to adopt ordinances. And the first reading of this ordinance was the last meeting that the Washoe County commissioners held before they stopped holding meetings due to the COVID shutdown. So we were stuck between the first reading and the second reading, and they determined that because they had sent out nearly 8,000 notices twice to the community about this plan, that they didn't want to move forward without the ability of the community to come forward to an in-person meeting. We didn't know how long it would take us to get comfortable with virtual meetings, and we really just didn't want to go forward without people's ability to come to an in-person meeting. So in January of this year, we did move forward with that second reading and adoption. And as you may imagine, some of the issues that the community were interested in had transformed in that time. In the first go around in 2020, one of the things the community was most interested in was short-term rentals. The county was in the process of developing its ordinance, but it hadn't been adopted yet. And so the community was very interested in how maybe this area plan could or should interact. And the county was assuring everyone that our short-term rental ordinance would address the issues. We have indeed adopted that ordinance. We're very proud of it. We feel it may very well establish best practices for some people. We're in the process of implementing it right now, taking in permits for short-term rentals. So in that interim time, some of the things the community were interested in changed. They became much more interested in the concept of mobility hubs, because at that first RPIC meeting, it was requested that Washoe County show on some maps some conceptual mobility hubs, some conceptual locations. And we did, and the community noticed that and said, hey, what is this? What is a mobility hub anyway, and what are you trying to put in here? So TTD very graciously stepped forward and put on four webinars for the community to discuss mobility hubs, what they are, what their intent is, what the local community benefit is, and what the region-wide, basin-wide community benefit is. It was an excellent webinar, and I want to thank them for doing that. And I think what happened is the community is much less concerned about what they are and much more curious about what they are. So that was a very beneficial turn of events there. And in that, last thing I want to mention is that we haven't really waited to begin some of the implementation measures that are in this proposed plan that you're seeing today. We have launched into a housing needs study. We've already begun that. We'll be launching into the community phase with some surveys and so forth very soon. But we didn't wait to start on some of the implementation measures, and we are beginning some of the prioritization of the other implementation measures that, are seen in this plan. So that's what I thought it might be important to spend a little bit of time talking about what's happened, because it has October of 2019 is a little bit of time. So I wanted to go over with you what's happened in that intervening time. Next slide, please. So what I'm going to go over now are what we feel are some of our accomplishments. We have what we feel are just one very significant overarching goal that we achieved. I'm going to discuss briefly five notable, more focused goals or accomplishments that we feel are interesting to bring up. There's more than five in the plan I could, but we chose these five because they're part of the public process and we felt they were worth noting. And then we wanted to bring up four changes specifically related to permissible uses. These are much more focused changes that we want to make sure everybody knows about that have to do with community input. So next slide, please. Our one overarching goal that we are really proud of, and this is really kind of what the big message of Michael's introductory comments were, is that creating a unified approach to planning and development based on the TRPA regional plan for all of Washoe County's jurisdiction in the basin. So this is not a small accomplishment. For many years, we had this dual planning approach where Washoe County maintained its zoning classifications and its zoning approach, which only meant a little bit. It didn't mean everything. It meant some. But the TRPA plans and the plan area statements were what we really had to go to. And we didn't realize that other jurisdictions had this issue as well. But as we got into it, we realized this was really something that all the jurisdictions were trying to accomplish. And we feel we really nailed this. The biggest goal here was to get on the same page with the TRPA regional plan, with the transportation plan, with all of those plans that we are interacting with. We need to be on the same page. And that brings me to the last thing I want to say about this big goal of making this big achievement. At the first RPIC meeting, or at the second RPIC meeting that we had a few weeks ago, there's a really important question about our willingness to continue taking community input and if we're kind of done with this plan. And I need to make it very clear that Washoe County, from the very beginning of undertaking this effort, saw the completion of this plan as a beginning point and not as an end point. The conformance review of this plan and the final adoption of this plan, what Washoe County really believes it does is finally get us to a starting point. And so we don't really see this plan as an end. We see it as a significant achievement, but in no way do we see it as an end. We sincerely see it as a beginning. We developed a significant number of new relationships, not only with TRPA, but throughout the community as well. And we intend to continue building those relationships with the community and other agencies to find out how we can improve this plan going forward. But the most important thing we could do before we could start to do that was to make sure we're all on the same page. And we really feel that we've done that with this plan. So next slide, please. So here are five things that I wanted to bring up that we feel are notable accomplishments. The town center environmental redevelopment that the regional plan is really fundamentally all about, we wanted to make sure that our plan was about that too. And so we have adopted all of the incentives that are available in the regional plan, additional height, additional coverage, additional density. We've included a couple other things in our plan to help incentivize the town center environmental redevelopment. So we feel it's important to bring that up, that we wanted to make sure that our plan reflects that fundamental importance of the regional plan as well. Greenhouse gas reduction was something that we really didn't anticipate we were going to have to do. We scratched our heads a little bit. We said, what does that mean? We had a great series of discussions with Michael and other staff at TRPA about what that means. And we feel we came up with something so useful that we're going to begin using it in our master plan update down here in the Truckee Meadows, which we have just begun as well. Our approach uses a mix of incentives and regulations, but it's also very flexible in that it allows you to sort of choose from a smorgasbord, so to speak, of different strategies in order to achieve this the standards that we implement. Urban bear and urban forestry standards, as far as urban bear goes, we've always had those, and what we try and do is point people to what those are and make sure they understand them. The urban forestry standards, you know, that presentation that we just sat through and listened to was of such high quality and such a high standard. It really makes me even more interested in what Washoe County may be able to do in terms of our urban forestry standards. I don't know what there is for us to do, what we need to do, what the opportunities are for us in this regard, but clearly from that last presentation, the people and the skills, the talents, the capacities that we need to build a network of people to help us understand this and to help us build some urban forestry standards for Washoe County, there couldn't be any better people, I think, than what's available to us right here in this region to help us build this. And so I'm pretty excited to find out where we're going to go with this. What our plan does is it doesn't establish standards, but it does commit us to building them going forward. And I think, like I said, after that last presentation, we can all be excited to see what we may come up with. Natural hazard standards. We've always had natural hazard standards. What we've attempted to do in this plan is to consolidate them and to point people to what standards they may be subject to. We cover, I think, six different natural hazards, from wildfires we just spoke a little bit about to even tsunami and sesh, seismic standards as well. And what we've done is develop a map that shows you where your parcel exists, which standards you may be subject to, according to which natural hazard you may be subject to. Of course, everybody's subject to WUI standards, but not everybody is subject to a tsunami standard or to a slope standard or a potential earthquake standard. So this map will let any particular person pinpoint their parcel and understand which set of standards they need to comply in order to make sure their development is consistent with all the potential natural hazards. We think that's something we're probably also going to replicate down here in the Truckee Meadows as well. Our emergency operations manager is pretty excited about the concept and helped us put it together up there. For BNP compliance, you may know that Washoe County is pretty proud that we've done a lot with the area-wide compliance. We've put in quite a few area-wide projects, but we've done about as much as we can do in that regard for area-wide. We're pretty much up against the wall on what we can accomplish there, and so we need to start changing our focus to private parcel, individual property compliance. So this plan commits us to working with TRPA to come up with a strategy for private parcel BNP compliance that would include incentives, regulation, and some other things that we can work on to help us continue to make progress in our part of the basin in water quality management. So next slide, please. So here I'd like to go over some of those specific changes to land uses. There weren't a whole lot. We didn't really approach this plan with the idea that we were going to make a lot of changes here. Like I said, we think our significant achievement here was to get to that fundamental place of conformance and consistency with the other plans. And we're willing to entertain, you know, further changes to land use in the future. But these were the four ones that came up that we did feel were important to make going forward. So the Ponderosa Ranch, I think everybody's familiar with that part of town, coming in and out of town there on Route 28. Well, everybody knows that it's not an amusement park any longer, but I'm not sure everybody realized that that amusement park was still established in our land use plans, that it never left and had never been transformed into anything else. So we transformed that part of our land use plan to really try and represent the southern gateway to the community, access to the recreation, the significant trails that are available there. So that's what we've tried to transform that part, that what's called the Ponderosa Ranch Community Plan, to change that to represent more that Southern Gateway concept rather than a potential amusement park. In the Fairway neighborhood, that's the part where some of you may be familiar where the actual chateau is for the Incline Village. GID has the Fairway access to golfing there and the chateau. People do use that in the winter for snowshoeing. It was required to have a special use permit. They requested us to see if we could just make it a use without the need for a special use permit. The environmental review said that would be permissible without mitigation, so we made that change. Nursing and personal care and residential care. This is one that we're kind of proud of as well, and we believe this is going to reflect in our changes down here in the Truckee Meadows as well. We've learned along the way that memory care facilities in particular do not really fit any other special model for how to fit them into a land use plan. And we heard from some memory care developers that treating them as a traditional residential use, even like a multifamily use, doesn't get them where they need to be density-wise. And they asked us to please review. And with the help of TRPA, we did review the potential densities for them. And it turns out that those uses, memory care uses in particular, for that fall under the nursing and personal care and residential care uses in the TRPA plan, those uses may actually be a little more similar to tourist accommodation units than residential multifamily units. And so through the environmental review, we got clearance to raise the density for these particular uses. And they're clearly needed, and we're happy to be able to remove barriers to their establishment in our part of the community. The last thing I'd like to mention is the increased design standards for transmission and receiving facilities, what I think most people refer to as cell towers. And we're not talking about the actual tower here. We really didn't touch that at all. But we did feel like there was room for significant improvement to these facilities if we looked at the standards for all of the support facilities that go around them. From the little shacks that need to be developed to what sometimes are required for buffering, but which really ends up kind of making it look worse in some degree. You've got a chain link fence with slatted, and I'm not sure how much better that really is. And so we've worked to develop more community sensitive standards for the facilities that support cell towers. We also feel, you know, once again, this is something that we reached out and tried to establish in the basin that we feel we're probably going to move down to the Truckee Meadows in our update as well. So the update of this plan and getting to this point has really helped us not only learn a lot about our own part of the basin, but how we want to approach planning in the Truckee Meadows as well. So, I'm going to stop at this point, ask for questions, and remind everybody as we move along that Washoe County is proud to reach this starting point with you. So thank you for your time, and I'll take any questions that you have.
Great. Thank you very much, Eric. I really appreciate it. Michael, did you have anything further?
No, I don't have anything further, but I'm also available for questions.
Okay, great. At this point in time, what I'd like to do, I'd like to turn it over to the board for comments and questions, and then we can get to public comment. Do we have any questions or comments from the board? And Mr. Chair, it's Jim Lawrence. I have a comment and two questions, if that's okay.
Okay, yes.
First, before I get to the comment and questions, thank you, Eric, and thank you, Michael, for the excellent presentation and all the work that's been done on this area plan. My first comment, I just feel like I just have to get this out there. I agree with Mr. Young regarding the urban forestry that we could all learn and do more. And I agree that the last presentation was excellent, but I know that you just can't cover everything in one presentation. I just feel compelled to say for the record, the North Lake Tahoe Fire Protection District, in my opinion, has been probably one of the biggest leaders in the basin in this space. And working with them since 1993, and they have done a tremendous amount of work. And I just don't want that to get lost. That being said, of course, we could always learn more, but I just felt like I had to get that on the record. Two questions. One is, and I was on RPIC, and I just didn't catch this, and I did support, obviously, an RPIC, but in reading through the packet and the individual comments, I have one question regarding the Calneva property and the other regarding the leaks question about stormwater. The question I have, and it's on page 293, it was regarding building height and town centers, and there was a question about how would it relate to the Calneva site, and the response is, any structures constructed along the eastern and southern boundaries would need to comply with the transitional height, but not others. That seems a little subjective. I mean, what is constructed along the eastern and southern borders mean? Is it a specific parcel? Is it like 50 feet from the boundary, or I don't really understand that. I don't want to get in a situation, particularly with NTRPA, where we're having to kind of work through the intent of this. So, you know, Michael or Eric, if you can kind of tell me what that means, and how much certainty is there?
I can start. There is a transitional height standard that the county is going to be requiring of development that happens adjacent to a town center boundary. And the eastern and southern portions of the Calneva property are adjacent to a town center boundary. The standard is specific. I don't have it in front of me right now. I could pull it up. But the standard does talk about exactly how far back you need to go before stepping up. And it would create a stepped approach to development. I'm not sure if you want to add to that, Eric.
I can add that I'm not sure exactly the provenance of that specific language. I'm not sure how that specific language was developed, or if it is. I can't really say if it's in response to a specific property. It is very specific language, I agree. And I don't know where that came from specifically in terms of those, you know, those numbers. It's been there in the regional plan for a long time. I can't answer his question specifically as to where that came from.
And I'm okay without knowing the exact number. I just don't want to have the agency or the Nevada Tahoe Regional Planning Agency in a situation of trying to make a subjective call on whether a building is along the southern border or the east or the northern border or the western border. I mean, if it's in the middle, it's in the middle. And so I guess if it is defined by specific how many feet from a town center, then I think there is that certainty and I would be more comfortable. I just don't want to be in a subjective situation down the road.
Yes, so I've got the standard up here. Oops, I had it up here. And essentially, it requires a two-story limitation at the front setback or at the setback, and for 20 feet, and additional height can be added by stepping back the third floor 10 feet from the building facade. And then a fourth floor can be added by stepping a further 5 feet back from the third floor. And so that's
Michael, how it works. Thank you, Michael. Okay. So that is something that you know, a property owner or staff could look to and say, okay, there's some certainty here if a project application comes forward. So I appreciate that. And then my second question, it was a Lake to Save Lake Tahoe comment, and it's regarding stormwater management. And I think the league asked or basically made the statement that they thought the stormwater management was a little bit unclear. And then the response is that the county's chosen not to pursue an integrated stormwater management program for the town centers. Instead, each parcel will be responsible, which I think is fine. Does this preclude doing an integrated stormwater management plan? And the reason why I'm asking it is, you know, after all the years I've given Washoe County grants for stormwater in the road systems, we've always had a challenge to find space in order to treat the roads. So it always kind of struck us that in the town centers where you have a lot of coverage and then you also have the roads, that in order to get a stormwater treatment, in order to account for both roads and private properties, that some sort of integrated approach would be needed. I'm fine with the answer as long as it doesn't preclude doing an integrated stormwater approach down the road.
I Mr. Hare, I can answer that. It absolutely does not preclude that. Not whatsoever. If that ends up being the solution for us to continue making progress, then that's what we'll have to do. We've looked at, you know, how we can continue to make progress. You raised a really good point about where you're going to put the road runoff. We don't know what a private property strategy would look like yet. We don't know how far down the road that would get us. I think we'd like to take an opportunity to put that together and see what it would do for us. And if it turns out that in putting that together and working with TRPA and our own staff that it looks like that's just not going to get us far enough down the road, then we would be more than happy to look at other solutions. And in fact, a private property approach might require an overlaid integrated approach along with it. So that's a bit of a long answer to just saying, no, sir, it does not preclude that.
Mr. Chairman, this is Alexis Hill. I can also add to this if you'd like me to.
Please.
I've spoken to Dwayne Smith, our public works director, about this issue, and it is something that we're looking at developing. So it will be certainly something that will be coming in the future for the Tahoe Basin and Washoe County's portion of that.
Great. Okay.
Excellent.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks. And thank you for the questions, Jim. I think Bill has a question as well or a comment. Bill?
Hi, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, I'm grateful for Michael and Eric's comments, especially in response to some of the recent comments we've received since the Regional Plan Implementation Committee, which we unanimously recommended approval of this area plan. I think Washoe County did a really excellent job. But for the sake of the new members on the governing board, I thought I would just kind of go over the short-term rental issue, which is always kind of like a burr under everybody's saddle. As probably Sue Novosel knows also well, when I was chair, I really put it to the Housing and Local Government Committee to try to address this particular issue. And we held several public meetings in which we even pulled together a task force of people to come up with a solution for, not a solution, but how we would deal with the question of the short-term rentals. And I think one thing that was clear after all of those, and I sat through all of those myself just to hear all of the discussion about it, because it is a big issue and I understand it. But for us as TRPA to come up with a one-size-fits-all kind of ordinance on addressing short-term rentals seemed unreasonable and unlikely. And then Jim Lawrence, a colleague who just spoke, came up with the idea that we simply put out some goalposts and some incentives for local governments to really address the issue, because after all, they have the enforcement. It pretty much is a significantly local issue. And what we would try to do from a basin-wide thing would necessarily run up against what Douglas County might be doing, or Placer County, or the fact that the city of South Lake Tahoe is totally different because they had their referendum on the whole issue. And so we came up with some guidance and things, and we placed it upon the local governments with the freedom to meet the way we address the question of short-term rentals, but in a way that was accountable, so that if you didn't do it, then the penalty would be that you would cut into your residential allocations. And we just got at the last governing board meeting, we just got through issuing the residential allocations. And Washoe County, because they're a bit behind, didn't get residential allocations because they didn't meet those requirements. But that's, it's not like we aren't doing anything about short-term rentals. And it's unfair to say that local government's not doing anything about short-term rentals. In fact, Washoe County has adopted a short-term rental thing that they're implementing now, and they probably will learn stuff as a result of implementation. So I just, wanted to respond to that. So the new members of the governing board recognize that we have addressed this issue. We came up with what we thought was a reasonable, not everybody was on board, but what we felt was a reasonable way for TRPA to encourage local governments to address this issue, and also recognize that there was no one-size-fits-all solution, and there's limitations on our ability as a regional agency to really enforce a lot of the things that are being requested of us. So, Mr. Chairman, I just simply want to get that out there on the record.
Great, thank you, appreciate it. Shelley, you had a question. Oh, okay, it's been answered. Anybody else with questions or comments so that we can turn this thing over to public comment?
Mr. Chairman, this is Alexis again.
Yes.
Hi, I just have a few comments. I want Great. To thank Michael and Eric for their hard work on this. And it was really exciting to adopt this plan. And I think that Eric did touch on this, but we are committing $100,000 to looking at the priorities for the next fiscal year of a local transit plan, parking plan, urban forestry plan, multimodal access to recreation opportunities, and private property BMP compliance strategies, as well as looking at beautification strategies for our town centers. So we'll be implementing those and continuing the community outreach, and just very excited that this is on our agenda today. Thank you.
Absolutely. I think we're all excited that this is on the agenda, and thank you as well for, I know you've had a lot of input, and you spent a lot of time and put in a lot of work on this too, Alexis. So I appreciate that. Any other questions or comments? If so, jump in. If not, I'm turning this over to Catherine to just 1 second, public comment. But I do want to, 1 second here. Let's see. I just want to make the statement. We will now go to public comment on this item. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Carol Black has her hand up. You are unmuted to address the governing board, Carol.
I guess it's good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. Good afternoon. You could probably have predicted I would call in. I've appreciated the discussion and the comments. And as you know, I've submitted information to various committees previously, and as have others. I submitted a document last night, which you probably have, which documents some significant concerns regarding process and content, which I unfortunately thought was important to have on the record. I'm not going to go through them all. I just want to make a couple of highlight comments this morning. I do realize this has been a huge effort. I fully expect that this will be adopted today, but we'll also look forward to some upcoming anticipated amendments. I do think I've enjoyed working with Eric and Michael over the last long period of time and other folks at TRPA in Washoe County. I do think that the presentation you just heard may have understated some significant community concerns regarding the waterfront here. Zoning changes, which have been minimized and understated, I think, in terms of their potential impact. Some of the town center standards and concern about that impact on these small communities. Short-term rentals, where we do have an ordinance, but there are still significant concerns. And the transit planning, where the hub is not exactly as well accepted as I think may have been presented. It is very good to hear that this is being viewed as a beginning and not an endpoint. So I thank you for that perspective. And I also thank Alexis for the initiative she just described that she's beginning. I think that just a few highlights, major changes do result from the de facto adoption of the TRPA zoning, where even though prior classification, Washoe County classification was restrictive and could have been viewed as compatible. The town center height and some of those requirements are still of concern to folks, and that's not really been addressed. I'm not sure we've really considered the impact on area occupancy of transient tourists and the vehicles they bring with them. The data that supports this is old, and 2015, and I know there's some efforts to improve measurement and reporting. And the area plan priorities don't always address root causes for issues like zoning changes, encouraging central development and tourism, which may create more congestion. I want to focus lastly on one area that concerns me particularly. The qualitative EIC appears inadequate to me for full assessment, failing to capture current and likely future adverse impacts regarding safety, evacuation, the environment, loss of housing supply, and neighborhood compatibility. I pulled out a couple of specific examples. There's a recreation statement that indicates that any increase in recreation demand is expected to be easily met, as well as a checked box saying that the proposal includes no increase in recreation demand, when in fact the zoning changes encourage increased tourism, creating major adverse impacts on traffic, trash, housing, communities, and recreation venues. You all know about all these. And it also says that possible interference with evacuation plans is not applicable. It's negated based on the assertion that more folks will ride buses, but fails to consider added tourist vehicles closing clogging evacuation routes in lieu of or after exiting other transport.
Carol, we got to wrap up here. We've got okay.
You can read what I sent in, but I just appreciate some consideration for these issues and as we look forward to amendments going forward. And thank you so much for listening, as always.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Carol. Any other hands, Catherine?
No, Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Okay, thank you so much. I'm going to bring this back to the board, ask the board if anyone has any further questions or comments, and then we have three separate motions that are going to be made, and I'm going to be asking for motions. So not seeing any further question or comment. Do I have the first motion?
Yes, anybody? Mr. Chairman, this is Alexis again. Motion to approve the required findings, including a finding of no significant effect for the adoption of Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan and amendments to Chapter 34, 36, and 38 of the TRPA Code of Ordinances as provided in Attachment D.
Great. Thank you very much. Maria, can we take a roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Thank you. Alexis, would you like to make the second motion?
Yes, sir. I just did not write down the ordinance number. Does anyone have that handy?
2019-03, amending 2019-03, that one?
Yes.
Alexis, this is John. We don't need the ordinance number. We leave it blank.
Oh, okay.
It has 2021 blank.
Okay. Okay. Motion to adopt the ordinance 2021, amending ordinance 2019-03, as previously amended to amend TRPA's regional plan to incorporate the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan as provided in the revised attachment K.
Great. Thank you. We have a motion. And Mario, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes.
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Great. Alexis, would you like to make the third?
Yes. Motion to adopt ordinance 2021 blank, amending ordinance 87-9 as previously amended to amend TRPA's code of ordinances to incorporate references to the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan into chapters 34, 36, 38, and as provided in attachment L.
Great. Thank you very much. Maria, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
I apologize. Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
Yes.
Mr. Lawrence?
Yes.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Great, thank you. And before we leave this item, I would like to turn the meeting over to Joanne so she could say a few words.
Mr. Chair, I will do that at the time of my executive.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'd like to move on to this next item and we're gonna call
on. Very good. Very good, okay. So at this point in time, what we're gonna do is we're gonna move back to agenda item number 7B, briefing of TRPA Sustainable Recreation Initiative, including regional collaborative partnership. We'll go back to 7B. Just one second as I do that. Okay. And information on this item can be found on page 149. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. I'm passing this over now to Julie Reagan to introduce and then to turn over to Jen Self to present. Thank you, Julie. Thanks for being here.
Thank you all.
Hi, Carol.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Julie Reagan, Chief of External Affairs and Deputy Director at TRPA. Carol Chaplin is with me on camera from the Lake Tahoe Visitors Authority. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to give a few introductory remarks, turn it over to Carol. She has another time commitment to get to, and then Jen Self will pick up the rest of the presentation for you this afternoon. I just wanted to tee this up, members of the board and the public, because this is a really critical priority for the Tahoe Basin right now, sustainable recreation and tourism. And as part of my doctoral studies at UNR, I have been evaluating this issue really from a global perspective. We are not alone in the challenges that we are facing. And just to give it some context, you know, 1 in 10 jobs worldwide were in the tourism sector pre-COVID. This is one of the world's largest industries, and certainly at Lake Tahoe, that's the case. And destinations throughout the globe, including Tahoe, are struggling with some of the challenges of balancing environmental concerns with economic pressures and community quality of life concerns. Keep in mind that Tahoe is about more than three times smaller in land mass than Yosemite National Park, and we get three times more visitors. So imagine just that in terms of the context of how we need to balance all of these pressures. And we have really organized very well around this topic, and I'd just like to offer Carol a few moments to say a few words about how we have partnered with the private sector, in addition to all the other public land management agencies, which Jen and others will speak to this afternoon. So with that, I just want to thank Carol Chaplin from the Lake Tahoe Visitors Authority for being with us, and give the floor to Carol before we continue the presentation. So thanks, Carol.
Thank you, Julie and Jen, and thank you to the board for the few minutes today. I'm sorry that I have another commitment. I'm going to have to leave it to Jen to knit this all together, but I think she's done such an amazing job on a lot of the calls and meetings that we've been in. I think she can do this. But I just wanted to go back a little bit and talk a little about the LTVA and perhaps why I'm here today and why it's so important that we sit together more often. In March of 2020, the LTVA ceased all destination advertising and commenced social media and website messaging around staying home and staying safe. As a matter of fact, we had to get more literal and say the mountain town you love needs you to love it from afar. We couldn't keep them away and they weren't listening. It was very counterintuitive for a destination marketing organization to tell visitors to stay away. We continued safety caution, COVID protocols, and no travel essential travel messaging through 2020. Summer advertising was canceled, events were canceled, winter advertising was canceled. The LTVA staff time turned towards education about the COVID travel behaviors, including the influx of visitors, particularly from the close-in drive markets, when work went virtual and schools closed. We understood better than ever that the Northern California market considers Tahoe its backyard, its refuge, its escape from the shutdown claustrophobia that was prevalent. Even during the peak of COVID, drive market visitors flocked here. Collaboration took priority, and we participated with agencies like the TRPA and others, yours around the table, and to understand what are around the lake, to understand our role. If there was one positive thing that came out of COVID, and there's a few of them, but sometimes it's hard to see, it was the close relationships and laser focus on COVID management and recovery that took place around the basin and around our states. We often sit at the tables together, but we don't make the table, as Amy Berry might say. And this was the beginning of making the table to understand what we could come around. We came together around one mission, one goal, which was to keep our community safe and sustain the economic impacts we were anticipating. The LTVA shifted funds to reinforce safe travel, respectful travel messaging. We supported billboards with take care messages. We participated in safe travel campaigns within Klein Village in the Carson Valley. But what we learned was that our destination was more desirable than ever, and our conversations started to turn towards mitigating the impacts. We all observed this revenge travel concept, and we all observed not only our repeat visitors, but new visitors with little regard for our environment. Single-use containers from restaurants allowed only to-go service exacerbated the trash issue. Stepping back a few years, though, pre-COVID, organizations like the Visitors already began evolving into what we call destination marketing and management organizations, incorporating the recognition and the responsibility for sustainable tourism. When COVID hit, we were pushed into the deep end feet first into the shift. And it's appropriate and necessary for us to participate in management and education of our visitors. And that's why we're here today. In order for us as a region and us as stewards of this destination and the place we call home, we need a shared vision. Without it, we continue to creep back into our silos, all doing good work, but not necessarily with the amplification necessary to shift to the sustainable and acute stewardship model. With the formation of the Sustainable Tourism and Recreation Council, the LTVA is excited to participate with financial resources towards this vision. And once we land on the vision, the LTVA will build strategy around it and continue its evolution in partnership management and attraction of not necessarily more visitors, but the right visitors. Ones who are looking for enrichment, inspiration, and ultimately stewardship that will support the efforts we all engage in today. It'll be very exciting and rewarding work, but I will leave you with this. We can build the table we sit around to create the vision. We can pat ourselves on the back with this vision, and we can march forward with a plan of action. But as I've so recently observed with the recent difficult decision to cancel an event, some say is the consummate American patriotic tradition, it will take courage and solidarity of purpose by all of us who have engaged and pledged commitment towards the vision. As Julie said, Jen is going to talk about the organizations, the TRPA's involvement in this process, and I just have to tell you, the board, how formidable the leadership of TRPA has been during this last year, and how appreciative we are of that movement and our inclusion in this process. And with that, I'll let Jen take it from here, and I hope that I can come back and visit you soon. And perhaps maybe even give you an update on that event center that you unanimously approved a while ago, and hope that you can be proud of that project as we move forward. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol. Really appreciate it. Great to see you.
Thank you, Carol. Hi, so much. Carol's been such an excellent partner, and she's talked about some of the challenges and coalition building that's been happening. And I'm going to continue with that presentation. I know Carol had to jump off, but I definitely have a huge appreciation for her involvement and also just hanging with us today as we move the schedule around a little bit. So Mr. Chair and members of the board, thank you for having us. I'm Jen Self. I'm the Long Range Planning Program Manager at TRPA. And with the USDA Forest Service, we've been leading the Sustainable Recreation and Tourism Coalition. Going into the summer season, we wanted to make sure to come to all of you and give you an update of what's going on. Next slide, please. So scrolling through social media, you often see photos like this one depicting this really intimate experience surrounded only by the natural beauty of Tahoe. The photo beckons, this could be you, come to Tahoe. And when you speak with our partners and community about their expectations of outdoor recreation, it's often not too far off from this. The expectations are they envision a world-class destination with breathtaking beauty, access to some of California and Nevada's best trails and waterways, and experiences that leave a lasting impression and perhaps even foster the next generation of stewardship. Next slide, please. The reality, however, is our community and visitors' experience can be quite different from those expectations. We've all seen the headlines. The busy areas are getting busier faster, and that shoulder season that we all crave is getting narrower and narrower. Next slide. While most global tourism destinations are struggling to get visitors and to rebound from COVID-19 pandemic, Lake Tahoe's visitation and outdoor use through 2020 did not take a hit. In fact, overall visitation to Tahoe last year was comparable to the previous years. While most lodging and local businesses did feel the heavy burden of the shutdowns, our outdoor spaces continued to see high use, and there is unprecedented visitation surges during the non-peak time, such as midweek and during that shoulder season, that frankly we weren't quite ready for. And all of this was despite full forest closures, one of the most extreme wildfire seasons in California history, and the stay-at-home orders. Next slide. One thing is certain, the visitors are going to keep coming to Tahoe. There is an allure of accessible outdoor activities, and the impacts from climate change, like those wildfires and heat wave, has and will continue to drive more and more people to Lake Tahoe. Trends can be somewhat unpredictable. That's why we've included likely on this slide. But we do have a sense of what we may expect. And that is post-COVID-19 tourism and outdoor recreation use and first-time users to Tahoe will likely continue to climb. The drive market and especially day trips for the Tahoe-Truckee region will remain high. There will be continued high visitation to forests and wilderness areas where infrastructure is limited or non-existent. And we've all seen that staffing, funding, and available transportation options are not keeping pace with the current demand. Next slide. So what does this high use mean for Tahoe? Based on experience, that can be summed up in two words: trash and traffic. The challenges we're facing now around recreation and tourism are all too familiar. They're not limited to just what happened during COVID in 2020. These existed prior to that. But the pandemic last year definitely seemed to put these issues into a pressure cooker for all of the partners working hard in this area. Our recreation sites are at the brink of becoming unmanageable. And it is these peak pressures and surges at our hotspots like beaches, Emerald Bay, and the East Shore that make the headlines and also garner the attention of our communities. As Joanne mentioned recently in an op-ed, amazing places like Tahoe can be loved to death unless we step up and take action. Next slide. And as Carol alluded to in her opening remarks, that is precisely what partners are doing. We're stepping up. The pressures put on the region from COVID were our catalyst. Tahoe's $5 billion economy is undeniably based in tourism, and all partners agree that now is the time to be intentional about our approach and to see the whole picture of how visitation is impacting Tahoe's environment, our economy, the user's experience, and our communities before it's too late. We are here today with you today to share the work that the partners are doing to better prepare and also respond to Tahoe's destination management challenges that we've all been hearing so much about. Next slide, please. In the words of Daniel Cressy with the Lake Tahoe Basin Management Unit, partners want to see near-term wins or those immediate actions as we build a longer-term vision and tackle the big systemic and cultural shifts. There is a recognition that we've made great strides in the planning for infrastructure. The regional transportation plan that the board recently adopted is a prime example of that. That plan envisions connected technology, 15-minute transit service between recreation hotspots and urban centers, and specific strategies to move people to, from, and around the region. So going back to the equation of trash and traffic, that is one piece of the puzzle. The void we are seeing now in visitor and destination management is how do we go about collectively fostering the good behavior of 15 million visitors. Pick up after yourselves, be good stewards, and if that hotspot is too crowded, pick another spot to enjoy. This is what we are trying to address in our coalition. TRPA is both learning and leading on this front, but we are certainly not alone. Next slide, please. TRPA became one of the founding signatories of the Global Future of Tourism Coalition early last year. This coalition established guiding principles for destination communities to reduce tourism impacts. Another significant leap forward is the ongoing coalition building that is happening. Beginning in March 2020, Tahoe Truckee partners banded together like never before to essentially become a visitor management strike team. TRPA and the USDA Forest Service have been leading coordinating committee virtual meetings on a weekly basis with highly engaged partners that are eager to be part of the solution. These partners include local nonprofits, business owners, public land managers, visitors authorities, public health and safety officials, local government reps, and public information officers. We also launch a biweekly e-newsletter that goes out to nearly 300 staff across the region to keep partners in the know. Together, we've been addressing nearly daily issues arising from careless and impulsive outdoor recreation. We share resources and information, align messaging that Carol spoke about, and work collectively to determine the next right step. These coordinating committees have also served as a model for other areas. For example, a recent collaborative was put together under the leadership of Hardy Bullock in Nevada County that was modeled after these committees. Next slide. So I want to share a few success stories that have come out of these committees. These are some of the immediate and near-term actions. During COVID, we ensured public information and messages were consistent, up-to-date, and shared across the organization and media platforms. The North Lake Tahoe Resort Association, Placer County, Lake Tahoe Visitors Authority, City of South Lake Tahoe, and the Take Care campaign all nimbly morphed to help manage responsible tourism by asking visitors to mask up and socially distance. Additionally, all partner organizations within the region launched coordinated know before you go messaging to better inform the public before they even got to the region. There is also a collaborative backcountry safety awareness week with informational videos and a panel of star athletes. This was attended virtually by over 450 people and has had countless views since. While many other destinations across the West experience high rescue rates within the backcountry due to folks venturing out unexperienced, Tahoe saw no backcountry fatalities last winter. So these are some of the tangible actions. Carol was alluding to some of the intangible things that have occurred, and this is what I and TRPA is most excited about. There is momentum building. Like never before, we have had both the land and rec managers and the influencers and messengers coming together in a coordinated way, and everyone is seeing the value not only for the region, but also for their own organizations. We are starting to see the silos come down. Next slide, please. But there is much more work to do. Again, going back to our question, how do you foster stewardship and good behavior of 15 million visitors? And the answer is that we all have a part to play in this. It will take intentional and collective action to make an impact. The partners are recognizing the unique role and responsibility each one of us has in destination and visitor management. For example, for the first time since 1986, the Visitors Authority stopped marketing altogether and asked visitors to love Tahoe from afar. They are also seeing the role that they can play in influencing behavior once the visitor is in the region. And this quote from Mary Lee at the League highlights the necessity of the cultural shift from moving away from an us versus them mentality. We cannot lose sight that Tahoe is ours to share, but it doesn't mean that the unfavorable impacts and behavior of tourism need to be accepted. The near-term wins and the next right steps are absolutely critical to address the immediate needs. However, without the long-term management strategies, we only continue to address the symptoms and not the underlying root causes. Next slide. So on February 25th of this year, TRPA, in collaboration with the USDA Forest Service, Nevada Office of Outdoor Recreation, and the Tahoe Fund, hosted an executives workshop to discuss a more sustainable recreation and tourism future for Lake Tahoe. We were joined by guest speaker Greg Miller from the Center for Responsible Travel and over 65 local thought leaders. The workshop set the course for a longer-term, more permanent coordinated action. We are building on that momentum, and the coalition is here. Partners believe that it starts with a shared vision of what we want Tahoe to be known for and what we expect of the people who recreate here. It also depends on how we organize, exploring a new economic model that values quality over quantity. And all of this must be done with multidimensional insights of both the private and public sector. Taking what we learned from the workshop, we are working with partners right now and gathering funding to develop that shared vision and an implementation roadmap and an RFP for that process should hit the streets within the next month. Next slide. This is the last slide of my presentation. This is some success stories and some of those immediate actions that continue and have the partners have been working on since that February workshop. They are taking action on all of these. They're connecting enforcement, education, reporting system, messaging, and additional infrastructure needs. There's a lot of work happening. Just recently, North Shore jurisdictions, including Washoe County under the leadership of Commissioner Hill, California State Parks, MDOT, announced contribution of nearly $500,000 to significantly expand the Clean Tahoe program. And there's a free litter reporting tool available to the public. The committees also just published the Lake Tahoe Recreation and Tourism Playbook that serves as a reference guide and one-stop source of information to better mitigate the impacts of high use. Another project spotlight, this summer there'll be over 75 ambassadors posted throughout the region at our beaches and trailheads to help people understand what responsible recreation actually looks like. And a huge kudos to the Tahoe Fund and the Take Care campaign for organizing 7 different groups to make this happen and also provide recognizable and consistent uniforms for all 75 ambassadors. There's also a coordinated regional stewardship plan, increased law enforcement patrols and ticketing along our recreation corridor, and free or low-cost transit options happening across North Lake Tahoe this year, thanks to new funding sources of Placer and Washoe County and the North Lake Tahoe Resort Association. The list goes on and on and on. So often it's the issues and pressure points that make the headlines, but my hope is that we were sharing some of the success stories and a snapshot of the amazing work that partners are doing across the region, and also a glimpse into where we're heading. And that concludes my presentation. I'm gonna go ahead and turn the floor back over to you, Mr. Chair, for any questions and comments on this item.
Great, thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate it. I would like to open it up now to the board for comments and questions.
Mr. Chair, Sue Novosel, El Dorado County.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this presentation, Jeff. I was not aware of this collaboration whatsoever until I saw my packet, and I think everyone needs to be applauded for getting this collaboration together. I think it hits on exactly what we've all been dealing with in the last year, especially our over love for our community, especially our lake. And I just thank you for that. And I just do want to point out that El Dorado County, Douglas County, Washoe County are very important players in all this. And I want to make sure we get invited to the table too, because I didn't see an invite. And I think it's critical that, as we're getting away from silos and collaborating, it's a massive job, I understand, but it's important that we make sure that, in particular, all of our jurisdictions are involved and aware of what's going on. Again, at El Dorado County, we've helped to put some funding together for some of those messages that are going out for people that are coming up to Tahoe to let them know that they need to take care, and very, very happy to collaborate in any way possible. So I'm just going to throw that out there and say I hope that if and when you do have another workshop that you make sure you include all the counties. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sue. I appreciate it. Bill Yates.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate what Sue had to say, making sure everybody is working on this together. I really appreciate this presentation, Jennifer, and also Carol, and also just staff taking the leadership on this to help pull this together. It's probably the one criticism we all get as directors is when these big weekends come up. My email always goes up with people complaining about what's going on or what's not happening right. There is there's something unique because I spent so much time on California's coast, and I now I've got to spend 9 years working on Lake Tahoe. There is more of a party hardy crowd at Lake Tahoe, I have to say, though there are parts of this in the coast too. But I do think it's going to be challenging to come up with ways to address public attitudes, but also the shared vision that we should have for this marvelous lake, this unbelievable geographical occurrence that created Lake Tahoe. It is when it hits 104 degrees, which they predict for next Monday in Sacramento. I mean, I know where everybody's going to go. They're going to go to the Sierras, and a lot of them are going to go to Tahoe. I really recommend that we stay on this, but it's also great that Senator Cortez Masto is taking a lead on this whole issue of recreational travel, recreational things. So I think there are opportunities here to really make the changes we saw in our regional transportation plan and merging that with what we're trying to do here. I really appreciate all the work that's been done, and it's really nice to see the collaboration, the Tahoe Fund, the League to Save Lake Tahoe, all the work that they've done. It's great. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that, Bill. Do we have any other comments or questions? Just jump in, please. Okay, I don't see anything else on my chat, and I don't hear anybody else. So
Chair,
thank you so much. Pardon me?
Mr. Chair, it's Julie Reagan here.
Hi, Julie, wrap
it out. Thank you. If there are no other board comments, I just wanted to thank you and Jen and Carol Chaplin for raising these important issues. Great comments from the board. Again, Julie Reagan, TRPA staff. And I'll just put a bow on this with a connecting of the dots to what we've heard about, you know, in the last many board meetings in the area of transportation, building off board member Yates's comment about Senator Cortez Masto's Travel Act and pending legislation. And certainly Supervisor Novosel's comments we take to heart. Local jurisdictions are key partners and have participated in many of these working groups and coordinating committees that Jen Self referenced earlier in the presentation. And we're actually going to be talking to each local jurisdiction about partnering on this request for proposals for a consultant to come in and help us build that shared vision. Destinations around the world are working on new stewardship destination roadmaps, and that is what Tahoe is embarking on. And so local jurisdictions are just going to be key partners in that. And the intersection into transportation infrastructure is very strong. And so we're going to incorporate a lot of these needs in some of the asks that we'll be making of our federal and state partners as stimulus packages are developed. So all the dots are connected, and that's why it's so nice for TRPA to participate in this partnership, as we often have that role of convening all the different parties to find solutions that work. Because we always say at Tahoe, our economy is our environment, and our environment is our economy. And there is probably no program that really demonstrates that mantra more than this Sustainable Recreation and Tourism Initiative. So we just appreciate the chance to bring the board up to speed. And thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you very much, Julie. I really appreciate it. Thank you for organizing this. Thank you, Jen, for coming in and helping us understand what's going on. Really appreciate it. Okay.
Mark, I do have a question or comment, I suppose.
Shelley, yes, please.
Julie, maybe you can answer this. In reference to the ambassador program, I think that's great. I hate to be pessimistic, but, you know, when people are recreating, people are getting tired of being told what to do and what not to do. And I think that these ambassadors need to be, you know, trained in a way that allows them to diffuse difficult situations. I mean, it's more than just handing out information or scolding people. If they're going to be scolding people, I think they need to be instructed as to how to deal with belligerent people. I mean, this could become confrontational, and I would hate to see them placed in harm's way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Shelley.
Julie, go ahead.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Chair and Shelley. We agree because we know COVID fatigue is real from folks who have felt very constrained, you know, over the last year. And I know that we're working with the Tahoe Fund and many other nonprofits collectively to address that. And one thing I think that was embedded in Jen's presentation is just additional law enforcement support will be around the lake. And that is certainly something that everyone takes seriously in terms of public safety. But it was discussed early on that we didn't want these ambassadors to be put in a difficult position. We even were pondering, should we try to get some survey opinions from folks, and decided that that might even go down the road in terms of escalating a tough situation. So we backed off that and said, let's just really have this be a positive experience. And as I said in my introductory remarks, I mean, these issues are happening on public lands around the United States. Every national park in America is facing some of these same challenges, and also internationally, different destinations are grappling with that because those issues are real, and I think folks are taking them real seriously. So we'll be sure to connect back with you on that more if we have more information, Shelley.
Great. Thank you very much, Julie. And John, it looks like you've got a comment.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, thanks for the presentation. Just on the ambassador program on Shelley's comment here, the South Shore program was initiated by the school district, really focusing on youth ambassadors. I think their goal of 15, it'll be good summer jobs, and they're definitely going to be focusing on diffusing conflicts. City of South Lake Tahoe is putting like $25,000 to support this program, as have other funders. And I think, you know, it's a really promising model of building stewardship among youth that could be replicated basin-wide. It really needs a sustainable source of funding ultimately to bring it up to scale. But I'm certainly excited about that. This part of the overall program.
Great, thank you. Appreciate it. Bill, it looks like you've got a follow-up to Shelley's comment.
Yeah, I think Shelley raised a good point, and I appreciate what John's saying about what the city's doing. I just had the experience a couple of years ago when I went out with our boat crew, where you can have these kind of confrontational moments. And I just want the board to know really how professional our staff is in that regard, and that kind of take care approach that they handle that situation when someone's inside the wake area or the no wake zone, or they're just, you know, just in the wrong spot. They're driving too fast into Emerald Bay. You know, it is more of an educational conversation. It isn't an attempt to just scold or do anything like that. We recognize that people want to be out and free and that kind of stuff. And they handled it so well the time that I was out there. Maybe it was because I was just lucky, but I don't think so. I think this is the staff is very good. And I think the kind of training that Julie's talking about is exactly the kind of stuff. And the way the Tahoe Fund has put together the Take Care program, I don't know that the way those signs are, the way they're set up is in any way to try to stifle someone's fun, but certainly try to influence that behavior so it's not destructive for others. But it is a balance. But I think I was so impressed just how well our boating crew handled some of those situations.
Thank you, Bill. And I was fortunate enough to be on that trip with you out there with them, and I concur completely. So I appreciate that. Any other comments? Hearing no further comments, I would like this to turn this over to public comment. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. And I'll ask Catherine to look for hands.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Teixeira, you unmute yourself. You can address the governing board.
Thank you, Catherine. Mr. Chairman, members of the governing board, good afternoon. Steve Teixeira for the record on behalf of Tahoe Chamber.
Our business organization is also on the front lines of these issues, and we appreciate the collaboration that's being developed and will be further developed over the coming months and years. This is a difficult issue. We've helped with messaging through our businesses. Businesses have been at the front end of some of the confrontations you were talking about. And we pushed out the take care messaging and the other stewardship messaging. And we're involved in a number of different ways. For example, we are very proud to have a seat on the Clean Tahoe Board of Directors and supported that board's expansion to the North Shore. We think that's terrific. They do a great job. We participated in the February 25th workshop that was mentioned by staff, where Dr. Greg Miller from the Center for Responsible Travel spoke. It was an excellent presentation. It was an overall good scenario. In fact, we thought so much of it that we're bringing Dr. Miller back. So the Tahoe Chamber will be holding one of our virtual town halls. This will be on June 18th, featuring Dr. Greg Miller, again, from the Center for Responsible Travel. So similar to some of the comments that were made about the Washoe County Tahoe Area Plan, we're at the beginning of this, and there's a long way to go. But it's important to have started, and it's important to bring others to the table. And we fully support the agency's leadership, the Forest Service leadership, and all the others that have been involved to date. And again, our town hall on June 18th from 11 to noon will feature Dr. Greg Miller from the Center for Responsible Travel. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Catherine, any other hands?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Amy Berry, if you unmute yourself now, you can address the governing board.
Great. Thanks. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Chair. Thanks for letting me just say a few comments, which is really just to say how excited we are about this initiative and how thankful we are to the TRPA to stepping in, Jen Self and Devin and Julie. Everybody's been just doing a great job. Carol kind of alluded to it in her comment, but one thing we've been talking about is this need to set a new table. I listened to a webinar one day. They were talking about outreach sort of not being a great term, because outreach means I'm going to outreach to you to ask you to come sit at my table. And in doing so, I'm going to ask you to assimilate to my views and my way of thinking. And I think what's been so great about this initiative is that there is no table to pull people into, that we're creating a new table together. So everybody has an equal voice. And it's great to see the chambers like Steve's team and the visitors authorities, Carol and Andy and Jeff, and then the Forest Service and TRPA all coming together to create something new, because what we really need is this new paradigm to really see a shift in how we get people to behave. And that workshop that we put together, I think, was kind of like day one of something that's going to be truly transformational for the region for many, many years to come. So just wanted to say big kudos to TRPA. I thank everybody for their engagement in this. And I think, as Jen alluded, we're just at the beginning. I think there's a lot more great work if everybody stays at this brand new table together. So thanks.
That's good. Thanks so much, Amy. Appreciate it. Okay, Catherine, any other hands?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Heidi Doyle, if you unmute yourself now, you can address the governing board.
Great.
Hi, everybody. I'm Heidi Doyle with the Sierra State Parks Foundation. We support 8 California state parks in Lake Tahoe and Donner area for education, interpretation, preservation, and advocacy in partnership with California State Parks, with the ultimate goal of creating a positive visitor experience. And as the tour operator for the historic House Museums in Emerald Bay State Park, Vikings Home, and Sugar Pine Point State Park, Hellman Ehrman Estate, and 3 visitor centers, we're focused on the exact question you're talking about in terms of sustainable tourism, and really excited about the various partnerships that we have worked with Take Care Tahoe and others in with this issue. We recognize the impact of this incredible visitation on our region, and the importance of communication pre-visit is just as important as that during and post-visit messaging. So thank you very much as you're moving forward to this. And again, thank you for the time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Catherine?
Mr. Chair, we have no other hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Okay, great. Thank you. At this point in time, I'd like to take a 20-minute break. I want to note that when we do get back, we will be jumping to agenda item number 9A, which is an appeal of a matter heard in legal this morning. 20 minutes starting now. So we're looking at 1:15, if everybody is okay with that. If there's no objection, that's what we'll do. 20 minutes. I am going to kick this thing off then. All right. We are now on agenda item 9A, appeal of denial of application for non-littoral existing mooring buoy, 4100 Doe Avenue, Placer County, California, assessor's parcel number APN 085-161-014, TRPA file number buoy 2021-0016. Information can be found on page 343 of your packet. As a reminder to the public, after staff presentation and board discussion on this item, you may raise your hand in the GoToWebinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff to share your comments. But first, we need to provide any disclosures for this item. Any member with a disclosure, would you please bring that to my attention, just verbally, and then we can go through it? Okay, hearing none. I'm going to pass this on to John so that he can present us with a report summarizing the agenda item, what happened at legal this morning, and then I'll add anything as the chair of the legal committee to the extent that I feel like it might be necessary after John gives us an update.
I will, Mr. Chair, but I'm wondering if you could just repeat your quick disclosure of this morning for this item for governing board consideration.
Oh, that was for the.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wrong item.
Yeah. No worries.
My apologies.
Okay.
Next slide, please. Good afternoon, board members. This morning at Legal Committee, we had a robust discussion regarding TRPA's requirements for the permitting of a buoy to a non-littoral parcel owner. And in this diagram, you can see the highlighted inland parcel, the teal or color, is the owner of the parcel in question. That Mr. Bryan owns, and then the purple teardrop is the location of the buoy. And Mr. Bryan is claiming that he has a right to this buoy, and that it's been authorized by the Corps of Engineers, and so therefore it meets our requirements. So if you can go to the next slide, please. Our requirements that we're talking about really focus on this chapter of our code and section, and that it goes to how we're considering existing buoys for permitting. And if you remember, a major part of the shoreline program was the, and this is the informal term, but the grandfathering or the recognition or the permitting of existing buoys. And there's really two major types that we divide the world into. One is for littoral owners, and the second one is for non-littoral parcel owners. And you'll see under sub A there that the requirements for the littoral owner are alternative. That you can either show that it's been in place since 72, or that you have a permit for it. A valley buoy permit or a lease, et cetera. But for item B, it's an and. You have to show that it's been in the lake since 1972, and that the parcel owner has valid authorization. Now, we talked a lot about how the language in B2 is relatively opaque, exactly what satisfies valid authorization. And we discussed that at the legal committee. Staff had denied this. So this is an appeal from an executive director decision. Staff had denied it based on the fact that the Army Corps of Engineers letter that Mr. Bryan was relying upon did not, under its own ordinances and code that it operates under, staff did not believe that it made the necessary link between Mr. Bryan as a parcel owner and this particular buoy, as to, you know, really it's getting at the ownership of the buoy and control of the buoy. The in staff's contention, the letter really just confirmed that it was in the lake prior to 1970 or 1968, which is B1, but didn't satisfy B2. The action, the recommendation of the staff was to therefore affirm the executive director's action. Mr. Bryan disagreed with that with that determination, appealed, and he's argued that the core letter does serve the purpose of identifying valid authorization, and therefore he should be granted his permit. To some degree, the recommendation of the committee, which I've done my best at summarizing, split the baby a bit. And the recommendation, as I've kind of worded it, is this, and we're free to have any discussion from committee members, but essentially to recommend that the governing board should grant the appeal to void the denial and remand to staff the application to validate Mr. Bryan's claim to ownership of the buoy in question, and also to direct staff to clarify the requirements for permitting existing non-littoral buoys. So, paraphrasing what I think the legal committee recommended was to go back and check to make certain that the Corps' letter will serve with the background check that Mr. Bryan's claim to the buoy ownership is legitimate. And so that's how I kind of interpreted the recommendation. And we can go forward with the presentations, or I would recommend that since both Mr. Bryan and staff agree with this recommendation, that we move forward with that as the topic for discussion, i.e. the legal committee's recommendation. So, Mr. Chair, if you want to add to that, that's our presentation. And if you want to provide Mr. Bryan with an opportunity to speak, please do so.
Thank you, John. I don't think I need to add to anything. My understanding was that the matter would go back and there would be like an evidentiary hearing or proceeding to determine the connection between the ownership of the buoy and the letter from the Army Corps of Engineers. Is that yours?
Yes.
Okay. So I do think that Mr. Bryan should have time to address the governing board. And I do like the idea, John, of us focusing on this specific issue, because I think it was unanimous at the legal committee that this was the issue that we all kind of landed upon. You know, if the governing board feels differently, we can, and wants to make a vote to do something else, that's fine. But I think this is most efficient, best way to proceed. So, Mr. Bryan, do you have a comment?
I do, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you. Once again, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really appreciate how much you guys have listened to me, especially this morning. But I do feel as though the rules are being changed a little bit. As I said earlier, the post is kind of kind of moving, but I am a fair person and I will agree with what we discussed this morning. I would like for the record to note that I have been told that moving forward, the code, the current code will still apply to my application, and there is no ownership date or will be no ownership date applied to my application aside from the fact of assigning ownership. I hope that makes sense.
John, do you understand that? I don't quite understand that.
Mr. Brian and I have had some email communication where we've kind of discussed these issues. I think we're on the same page.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chair, what I'm basically saying is that the effective date of the code that we are reviewing today will still apply to me moving forward.
Yep, understood.
Great, thank you.
Okay, so I guess, John, at this point in time, my feeling is that we should open this up to the governing board to see if they have a different take on this, if they'd like to do any further inquiry. So I'm going to do that. And it looks like Bud, actually, there's multiple people here. Give me one second. Bill, you wanted to comment, and then Bud. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, sorry, Mark. I had to get off mute. I guess I'll just defer to the other members who weren't at the legal committee. I was just going to comment on John's understanding of what the legal committee did, and I agreed with his determination.
Great. Thank you. Okay, so Bud, you're next on the list. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I have a question about, and perhaps John can clarify this, but John, I thought you said that there were essentially two parts to the conclusion by the committee, one being to grant, send this back to staff for this reconsideration, but did you also make a reference to asking staff to clarify or to do some work on clarifying the ordinance itself?
Yes. So
what's envisioned in that? What do you expect them to do? What does the committee expect them to do?
I think the most poignant comment was this doesn't really tell an applicant what they need to bring forward. And so I think we would work with our Shore Zone stakeholder group to try to get a quick change, although we know in Shore Zone world, quick is relative. But essentially to try to get some language to clarify what we are seeking in 3B too small I that would satisfy this notion of trying to make the connection between the, you know, essentially the buoy ownership and control by the person seeking the permit from TRPA.
Okay. Well, then Mr. Brian's comment, I understand he wants to have his matter judged by the ordinance as currently written, not as how it might be changed in the future. Am I correct in that understanding?
That's correct. And we would process, I mean, it's much easier to process his application than to change this code. And the code wouldn't be in effect until 6 days after we even get a change. So we'll be acting on his application per the direction, hopefully within, you know, a very short time.
One more question. I understand the situation here with Mr. Brian and his buoy, but there's obviously a littoral owner this buoy is offshore of a littoral owner. Is that person involved in this discussion?
They are not typically involved from our, you know, application. It's the HOA that apparently owns the parcel, or it's part of the offshore of the HOA pier. We can check in with the HOA to make certain that there isn't a conflicting claim of ownership. But, you know, that's what I think we would ordinarily seek if there was an identified parcel owner, we would seek input from the parcel owner in other situations.
Okay, so this action won't jeopardize the right of the littoral parcel owner to apply for a buoy, you know, in the ordinary course.
In general, this won't. This will, if this is recognized, this will count as a buoy offshore of the, if there is an HOA field. This may be one where there is no HOA parcel, and so we're going to have to, you know, that's been an outstanding issue for us of how to deal with these kind of road end congregation of buoys, to put it somewhat opaquely.
Well, I understand.
There'll be some enforcement actions here eventually.
Yeah,
to clean this up.
I understand, but I think it's an important question because if it's not a common interest community ownership situation, and there is a littoral owner, a private littoral owner, that would otherwise have a right to place his or her buoy off of his or her parcel, then that person, I think, should be involved in any type of resolution of a, you know, someone else's buoy off of their parcel.
Yes, I mean, understood.
Doesn't that present an issue that should be considered?
Yes.
Okay.
And this, John, just to clarify further along Bud's question, does that, because this is an HOA, is talking to the HOA enough, or do we need to talk to the parcel owner that is littoral for purposes of the buoy?
We'll need to make certain that the parcel owner, regardless of who they are, understands what's happening and has an opportunity to provide information. I believe it's the HOA, but I'm not going to swear to that at this point.
Okay. Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you, John.
Okay. Thanks, Bud. Shelley, please.
Thank you, Mark. So I'm still a little confused about how valid authorization equates to ownership, or how ownership equates to valid authorization. When I think of a valid authorization, I'm thinking of a permit being issued, a permit of some sort, or a letter of authorization from an agency like the Corps of Engineers or the State Lands Commission. So does Mr. Bryan actually, and John, you and I kind of discussed this offline, I mean, there are lots of ways to transfer ownership of something like this, personal property, either through a bill of sale or a reference in a deed or a purchase agreement. Did any of that take place?
That's what we would be looking for Mr. Bryan to provide. As of right now, you know, he's established the ownership of the parcel, which we don't contest.
Right.
And that the buoy's been in the lake for a long time, which we don't contest. And now we're looking for, you know, evidence of his control of the buoy.
Okay. All right. So that basically, even though that's not specifically how that subparagraph is written, we are equating valid authorization with ownership at this point.
Yes.
Is that okay? And as far as we know, the association who owns the literal property has not made application to prove up their ownership of the buoys that are in the field lakeward of their parcel?
I'm going to have to turn that one over to Matt. Are you on?
Yes, I am, John.
If you could address Shelley's question, please.
Yes. The HOA, Tahoe Pines HOA, has applied for an existing buoy field. This is a street end, and this is a HOA designed by a subdivision. There's not actually a littoral parcel that the HOA appears to be in ownership of. To clarify further, the buoy is not in front of the street end, where at least in the location that Mr. Bryan identified, it's actually in front of another private littoral parcel.
Okay, so is that going to present a complication for the association? I'm looking at the map right now, Matt. It appears that the kind of disorganized array of buoys that I'm assuming are the ones that the HOA would claim appear to be lakeward of individual parcels that are privately owned?
Yes, some of them are.
Matt, may I say something?
Okay, well, I guess my, you know, we've been confronted with similar situations in the past, and if staff, I'm certainly supportive of staff's willingness to go back and work with Mr. Bryan to come up with an equitable solution, but if the association is moving forward with an application to permit the buoys in their field, and if, you know, perhaps the applicant can negotiate a deal with the association to integrate his buoy into that field and still retain the right to use it. I mean, I know that ultimately that's our objective, is to consolidate these buoys into an organized field that meet our code requirements. So I would just offer that as perhaps an alternative if you're not able to negotiate a final mutually agreeable solution.
John, may I say something?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's very interesting, Tahoe Pines, that actually we do have literal ownership, the HOA, at the pier at the end of the street, as Matt was referring to. But there's an easement that in 1911 was actually going to be a park. So the literal owners don't have lake access, but they do own to the waterline. It's a really kind of a convoluted mess. But the two buoys adjacent to mine are actually permitted, non-literal. They're right next to mine. The O'Neills, they're referenced in my California State Land Commission letter that you guys were sent a while back. But it's not a simple issue. I apologize for that, but it's an interesting area. The HOA, it wasn't technically a field. It's just the community's been there so long. They've been in place way before 68. And I believe I'm the only one that has gone this far with it. I believe a lot of people have just given up. But it's going to be interesting. Thank you.
Let's see, Jim. You have a question, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And a comment. I do, listening to Shelley speak, I concur with, you know, her thought of, you know, the best case scenario is to integrate it in with the overall HOA buoy field application. And that's kind of where we wanted to go as an agency. So I do like that. But my question is, I thought I understood, and now I don't think I do. 3B2, valid authorization is highlighted, and then I heard the conversation between John and Shelley that valid authorization really is kind of interpreted as ownership. But then it also says from the applicable federal or state agency. So is the path moving forward to find ownership information from the applicable federal or state agency, or is ownership proof from the property owner sufficient to satisfy 3B2?
Oh, very good question, Jim. If he was to present a state, you know, land agency lease or permit, then we would take that as a valid authorization. The problem that we're having with core letters is they don't necessarily make that determination as to the control of the buoy as part of their grandfathering. So we would be seeking from Mr. Bryan the evidence to establish that he's actually in control of that buoy.
Thanks, John. And I can appreciate the situation. And actually, this whole conversation reminds me how much I don't miss doing shoreline planning. It does strike me, though, if the property owner provided proof, you know, whether it's old receipts or what pictures, I used to do this a lot, and, you know, would get the Army Corps letters and would get a lot of pictures from property owners. But it does strike me that it still would be contrary to 3B2 if that ownership tie isn't from an applicable federal or state agency.
I think that's the second reason, or the reason why there's the direction to staff to clarify the language. I think it would be a gloss on what valid authorization constitutes. You know,
John, could I just mention one thing?
Yes.
Jim, the way I was looking at this, valid is separate from authorization. You can have the authorization, but it's got to be validly authorizing you, because you are the person that has the control over the buoy.
Okay, thanks. Thank you both. I don't know if I necessarily agree. But certainly willing to see how this plays out.
Can I weigh in one more time, Mark? I'm wondering, yeah. It occurred to me while Jim was speaking, a valid authorization to me could also be a recognition by a state agency or a federal agency that they have been given substantial proof that the buoy belongs to the applicant. Because it doesn't specifically refer to permit. It refers to authorization. Is that a valid interpretation, John?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. I'm looking for anybody else with questions or comments. I'm not seeing any. At this point in time, I would like to go to public comment, unless, John, you think that there's anything else to discuss before we do so.
No, but let's go to public comment.
Okay. If any member of the public wishes to address the governing board on this agenda item, please raise your hand now and go to webinar to be unmuted by TRPA staff. Catherine, please let us know.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no hands raised to make a comment on this item.
Okay, we will close public comment and we will come back to the board. If there are no other comments or questions, and I don't see any other comments or questions, I would like to entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to grant the appeal.
Can I read a motion bill that would grant the appeal, but clarify what that does?
Sure. If you would, I'll make a motion to grant the appeal, with the additional language coming from our general counsel to clarify, the process.
Thank you.
I would think the appropriate motion would be, that the governing board should grant the appeal to void the denial and remand to staff to validate Mr. Bryan's claim to ownership of the buoy in question and to direct staff to clarify the requirements for permitting existing non-littoral buoys.
Thank you, John. When you say validate, I assume you mean confirm the validation of.
Yes. I was trying to use that word specifically to connect it to the regulatory provision.
Great. Any comments or questions?
Mr. Chairman, I make that motion.
Thank you. Assuming no questions or comments, and I'm not seeing any or hearing any, Mario, would you please take a roll?
Mr. Chair, I think Casey Beyer has a question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Casey. I didn't see your...
I probably didn't see it directly, Mark. I apologize. And I think it got clarified. My comments or questions got clarified by Shelley's comment. It seems to be the sticking point of the wording of an undefined or a very vague definition of valid authorization, which is causing the confusion. What is that? I still, in my mind, I'm still confused what that actually means. A valid authorization should be 1, 2, 3, and you're saying it can be a state or a federal agency, but we're not really making it perfectly clear what information the applicant has to go and retrieve to make that claim. That's, and I don't think we're going to get it resolved here, but I think going the direction of your motion is the right direction. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Casey. And John, given that the motion is pending, is there any additional language that you need to pursue the potential review of this by staff, or is it good enough for us just to give you direction?
I think the direction is good enough.
Okay, very good.
Mario, sure, I do have a quick question before I vote.
Okay.
John, just to follow on, so in this particular instance, pending the larger review of this language by the Shore Zone group, the resolution of this appeal will be decided based on proof of ownership. Is that correct?
Correct.
We're interpreting authorization as ownership.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, that's not my understanding what that word means, but yeah. But that was the direction of the committee to, and it did not hold up this particular appeal pending just the larger clarification of this language to move forward. And can you tell me again just why that was decided to move forward and not have this pending the more general resolution of that language?
Generally, it's because this is a, you know, I can't give you an exact timeline for when we'll be able to bring forward that Shore Zone code amendment. Those tend to be controversial, as you can tell. There's lots of different perspectives. And so during the interim, we'll take this as a direction from the from the board as to how to apply this code provision. So that'll be for this, in particular, for this pending appeal.
Okay. So I guess to me, authorization, you know, looking at a definition is, you know, document giving permission or authority. It's not a document providing ownership proof. But that's my problem with it.
I guess as the maker of the motion, the reason we're doing this is because the way that number two is set up to require this applicant to provide some kind of valid, he's in a catch-22 because this buoy never required a permit, never required any authorization. It was there. It's been identified by the Corps as there. And the Corps' letter says it's connected to that property, and he had some things he showed us in committee that suggests that he's paid taxes on it. He's done all this other stuff. So it was like, okay, let's just proof that up. And does that satisfy this current situation? But I think we were all in agreement that we ought to fix up this ordinance because it's really not clear what the applicants, future applicants, would have to provide us. So we'd feel comfortable that your buoy meets both requirements for a non-littoral buoy owner.
Okay. Anything else? I'd like to ask Maria to take roll. Maria?
Ms. Alding?
Yes.
Mr. Beyer?
Yes.
Mrs. Sagaski?
Yes.
Ms. Faustinos?
Yes.
Ms. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Friedrich?
No.
Mr. Lawrence?
I'm very uncomfortably voting yes on this, but I will be taking a very hard look at what the agency decides is valid authorization when it comes to ownership. I'm struggling with this. So I will vote yes to see how and honor the legal committee. But I will be taking a really hard look moving forward.
Ms. Gustafson?
Yes.
Mr. Rice?
Yes.
Ms. Novosel?
Yes.
Ms. Williamson?
Yes.
Mr. Yates?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that motion passes.
Okay. Let's go. Give me one second here, folks. Okay, so I think we're moving on to agenda item 10, reports. I'm going to pass this on to Joanne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Earlier today, I punted a comment at the end of the Washoe County area plan item. We called an audible there because we had to move on immediately to the sustainable rec item, but I wanted to make sure that I fit that comment in. And it's about Michael Conger, who was the planner who you saw present that item. He's been on our staff for a number of years now, and I don't know if Michael is still listening on or is still on the meeting, but I wanted to take this opportunity really to thank him for his time with us at TRPA. As you know, he is one of our long-range planning staff who will be leaving for some family reasons, and I just wanted to say and acknowledge he has been such a pleasure for us to work with. He's a team player. He's been an exceptionally solid planner. He's unflappable. I mean, he's sort of the consummate professional. When he first came, he was a really quiet guy. He kept to himself at first, and slowly he came out of his shell. And now he is one of our really highly well-respected colleagues on our staff. And so we're sorry to see him go. And I wish him all the best on behalf of all of our staff and on behalf of the board. We'd be happy to have him back. We've been trying to entice him to work remotely, but he has his own reasons, family reasons for needing to relocate. And so we just wanted to say we have so enjoyed and respected working with him. So I wanted to make that comment at the end of the Washoe area plan, but I'll make it here. And then the second item that I wanted to cover today is really related to a program that we have at TRPA on environmental scholarships. And for those of you who may not be aware, TRPA sponsors an environmental scholarship program every year. It's supported by voluntary donations from all of us, really. We ask the board and APC and the staff to make contributions if you're so inclined. And it's one of several ways that we support the next generation of those who are interested in understanding and connecting their lives and potential livelihoods to environmental work. And so what we recognize is that when young adults are applying to college, oftentimes the first and most formidable obstacle that they face can often be the financial price tag of admission to higher education. So for nearly two decades, TRPA has helped to ease that financial burden by offering environmental education scholarships to local high school students. And TRPA created this fund in 2004. It awards small scholarships to Lake Tahoe seniors who are pursuing an environmental career. And since its inception, 27 students have been awarded a total of almost $12,000. The scholarships are granted based on need and academic merit and the students' desire to pursue a career in an environmental field. And the funding for these scholarships, as I said, comes from the various generous, very generous TRPA Governing Board and Advisory Planning Commission members, as well as our staff contributions. So last year, thank you all. We received record donations, more than double our previous 2 years combined. And if after hearing about this year's awardees, I'm going to hand this off to V in a moment. If after hearing about this year's awardees, you're inspired to contribute or contribute again, you can write us a check made out to TRPA with a memo that indicates it's for the environmental scholarship, and to do that by June 30th if you're interested. So I would like to turn this over to Victoria Ortiz from our staff. She shoulders the administration of these scholarship awards for TRPA, and she'll talk just a little bit about each of this year's award recipients. So V, if you're on, I believe she can't. She can't come on camera, so you're just going to hear her voice.
Yes, can you hear my voice through the ether?
Yes. Yes, we can. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you so much, Joanne, and to all of the board members who have donated in the past. If we can switch to the next slide, please. Excellent. Great. So I wanted to share this year's two impressive students who were each awarded $500 scholarships. So Brandon Salas and Kosan Verkler. Brandon Salas of Incline High School comes from a Bolivian immigrant family and will be the first generation college student in his family. He plans to study mechanical engineering at the University of Nevada, Reno, to develop new technologies that address climate change and resource scarcity. His dedication to community service, ROTC, and assisting his family while maintaining a stellar academic record shows his capacity to excel while also balancing multiple obligations. We know that his persistent hard work, leadership, and maturity is going to make a positive difference in the world, and we're delighted to support him on his educational journey. And secondly, Kosan Verkler of North Tahoe High School plans to study forestry and fire ecology at the University of Montana. He credits his Tahoe upbringing for calcifying a deep love for the outdoors. His commitment to protecting the environment and communities by becoming a wildland firefighter came through very clearly in his application. His excellent academic record, in conjunction with extensive volunteer, leadership, and sports activities, shows his ability to focus and achieve his goals. Kosan plans to hike the Tahoe Rim Trail this summer before leaving Tahoe. So if you see him out on the trail, wish him well in his future endeavors. So thank you for listening. Again, if you are interested in contributing, you can write a check to TRPA with a memo for the environmental scholarship by June 30th, 2021. And you can mail that to the attention of myself. Again, my name is Victoria Ortiz, or to Maria Ambler. So thank you again, Joanne, and thank you to everyone who donates.
Great. Thank you, Victoria.
Thanks, V. And that concludes my report for today, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you so much. Moving down to, let's see, John, do we have any status report?
Yes, my work plan has just changed. So I'll be working intimately with John Friedrich and Jim Lawrence on the new code amendments to the Shore Zone package. But aside from that, we have no developments in our litigation load to report.
Okay, thanks, John. Moving to agenda item 11, governing board member reports. Do we have any governing board member reports? I'm going to be looking here at the chat, or you can jump in verbally.
Mr. Chair, it's Jim Lawrence.
Yes.
Just real quick, this is second legislative stuff. The state's PR for the CIP bill came out today, and it does include our $8 million request for EIP bonds for Lake Tahoe over the next 2 years. So that's excellent. Good news. It still needs to be voted on, but it looks like it's moving forward.
Great news. Thanks a lot, Jim. Really appreciate you keeping us in touch with that. Haley, please.
Thanks so much, Chair Bruce. This was just actually to Shelley's question earlier in the agenda, just so much
interesting information today, but Shelley had asked during the fire presentation about emergency management planning. And so I'm going to put on my PUCN, my Public Utilities Commission hat, just for 1 second, and give a quick update that, as you guys are probably aware, Nevada authorized public safety outage managements or power shutoffs for the Lake Tahoe Basin in times of high wildfire risk. And the Public Utilities Commission did approve an emergency management plan for local fire districts, local law enforcement, and telecom communications providers with what to do if the power is out in terms of emergency planning for evacuation and wildfire threats. So I just wanted to highlight that. I'm always available to answer questions, but it is something that is actively in the amendment process in front of the PUC right now as well. But so just everyone knows that as we head into fire season, if we do get those proactive de-energization of the power lines, there are plans in place as well of what to do, how to safely evacuate and communicate with power outages. So just wanted to throw that out there and always happy to talk more about that if anyone ever wants to.
Great. Thanks so much, Haley. I appreciate it. I'm looking at the chat. I don't see any other chat, but I'm totally open to people jumping in just verbally. So please jump in if you have any other report. Okay, hearing none, we are moving to agenda item 12, committee reports. Let's start with local government and housing. Anything?
Nothing to report this month. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, thanks. And legal's had its fair share of time today, so we'll skip legal. Operations and governments, Shelley, anything?
Well, nothing really further other than the fact that we'll be reviewing and making a recommendation on the final 2021-22 budget at our next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. EI Transportation Public Outreach. Jim, anything?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We are going to be meeting at the adjournment of this meeting. I would suggest maybe 2:15 to give some folks a break. And we will be hearing an update from staff on the transportation funding initiative briefing. So all are welcome.
Great. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for leading that. Bud, we've heard from you quite a bit today, but if you have anything else to add,
we're here. Mark, I would just like to add that, as I stated before, we're going to have a Forest Health Wildfire Committee meeting in June. And also on our agenda, at the request of John Frederick, will be a preliminary discussion on biomass projects. And apparently there's an interest in the city of South Lake Tahoe for some type of a facility. So we will have a preliminary discussion about that at that time. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Bud. Appreciate it. RPIC, Bill, anything else?
No, we had a month off.
Very good. Okay. So we are jumping right into agenda item 13, which is the final public comment. Our final matter of business is our general public interest comment period. Any member of the public wishing to address the governing board on any item listed or not listed on the agenda, including items on the consent calendar, may do so at this time. Individuals or groups who have already commented on items listed on the agenda are not permitted to comment on the same topic. The governing board is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public during the public comment period. We'll hear comments on any single topic that are not on the agenda for up to but not to exceed 30 minutes. We'll hear as many unique comments as possible, and we'll hear comments for up to but not more than a total of 60 minutes. All unheard comments can be submitted via email to mambler@trpa.gov and will be forwarded to all governing board members. If any member of the public wishes to speak at this time, please raise your hand and go to webinar.com. Go to webinar. Sorry. You will be unmuted one at a time, but TRPA staff will indicate that you have the floor. I'm going to turn this over now to Catherine. Catherine, would you please let us know if anyone's got their hands written?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Carol Black.
Okay, Carol.
The governing board.
Excuse me. Definitely noon now. Good afternoon. My comments relate to the Boulder Bay project, and I sent these in writing as well. the Boulder Bay project in Crystal Bay with questions about both that project and the plans for other nearby properties and resulting concerns about traffic, particularly evacuation capacity and capability. As best I can find, this project was approved by TRPA in 2011 with traffic studies and EIS projecting that BMT's traffic impact would actually be decreased. And the developer reportedly committed to a follow-up traffic study after 5 years. I understand it's been on semi-pause for years. It is now moving forward again. To me, I find it remarkable that given the scope of what was proposed, the TRPA approved it. Approval apparently projected a decrease in traffic with this project, but be that as it may. I remind you that in addition, the small area along Route 28 includes Calneva, closed for years, but also planning development, and other vacant boarded up properties, some across the straight line in California, and all which will presumably plan some enhanced development. In addition to likely daily traffic jams, which are a potential concern depending on the scope of development, I remind you about the possible evacuation routes from Incline Village, Crystal Bay in the event of a fire. There are three. One goes through Crystal Bay on this road that I'm worrying about. One goes south. I may have the geography wrong. One goes towards Route 50 in Carson, and the third goes over Route 431 to Reno. And I hear that Route 431 would be closed to allow for arriving fire department vehicles. So with all of this potential actual development clogging Route 28 through Crystal Bay, residents and visitors to Incline Village, Crystal Bay, would be left with only one potential egress route towards Carson City. And there is no room for a parallel Crystal Bay through traffic diversion road, as has been talked about in South Lake Tahoe. Possible boat options, I suppose, but overall, I feel the situation could be dire. I understand the TRPA viewed Boulder Bay as a flagship town center project, but there has been no comprehensive area-wide traffic study, which is, I believe, urgently needed given the many in-process and likely planned projects being considered in this small, already congested area adjoining a major and critical thoroughfare. Full evaluation and mitigation of public safety implication is critical, and I therefore urge TRPA to use your influence, convene appropriate parties, or whatever it would take to facilitate, sponsor, perform a comprehensive study of all the possible projects planned and thought about in that area and traffic and evacuation implications. Maybe the Boulder Bay developer could perform an additional traffic analysis. He said he would do something in 5 years, and even though he hasn't built too much, it's been more than 5 years, or agencies could be in considered. And I will now stop. I just ask you to please think about ways to help us. I am very worried about the potential for a real problem in that area. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's see, Catherine, anything further?
Mr. Chair, there are no other hands raised to comment on this item.
Okay, that's it. That's the end of this. We'll close public comment, and we will, I think we're moving to adjourn here. Yep, item 14. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All in favor, please say yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Any opposed, say no. Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you so much.